Good morning. I'm going to call the meeting of the Arizona State Board of Technical Registration to order. Today is Tuesday, July 24th, 2018, and I have 9:02 a.m. We'll start off with roll call.
Dr. Alejandro Angel, Jack Gilmore.
Present.
Neil Jones.
Here.
Jason Foose.
Here.
Jason Madison.
Yep.
Edward Marley.
Here.
Stephen Knoll.
Here.
Andrew Everode.
Here.
Eugene Montgomery.
Here.
We have a quorum.
Yep. Thank you. We'll move on to the call to the public. If you signed up to speak, this is where you'll speak. You won't necessarily do the call to the public. Members of the public may address the board during this call to the public for no more than 3 minutes pursuant to ARS 38-431.01H. Board members are not allowed to discuss or take legal action on matters raised during an open call to the public unless the matters are properly noticed for discussion and legal action. However, members may ask staff to review a matter or may ask that a matter be placed on a future agenda. Is there anybody here to speak and call to the public? I see no hands. I see no movement. We will close the call to the public and move on to the adoption of minutes. Has everybody had a chance to read the minutes or review the minutes? And are there any comments for the June 26, 2018 board meeting minutes?
Mr. Chairman, I move that we accept the meeting minutes of June 26, 2018.
Second.
I have a motion and second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any against?
Abstain. Abstain.
We have item 4B1 is approve, modify, reject June 26, 2018 first executive session board meeting minutes. Have those minutes been circulated?
It still have contained both the first and the second executive session minutes, so feel free to look at both of them.
Can I have a motion to consent the two items then?
So moved.
And second.
Abstain.
Thank you. Has everybody had a chance to review the minutes? Are there any modifications?
Mr. Chairman, I move that we accept the June 26, 2018 first executive session board meeting minutes.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any against?
Abstain.
Abstain.
And item D2 then?
Mr. Chair, I move that we approve the June 26, 2018 second executive session board meeting minutes.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Abstention?
Abstain.
Motion carried. Minutes approved. Item 5, we do not have cases referred for formal hearings, so we'll move on to item 6, enforcement matters. And I have a note that the parties for 6E1 have some consideration for travel arrangements that they're working with, so we're going to bump them up to the front if nobody has any objections to that.
6E1.
6E1. And let's see, Jeff, is that your case?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
We have the respondent, Mr. Hinton, and as well as David Boyce, who is the principal for the firm.
Okay. And I'm off track here, pardon me. Okay, this is agenda item 61. It's case number P17064. The respondent's name is Stacy Henson. The synopsis of the complaint is, on December 28, 2016, the board received a complaint alleging that respondent and respondent firm submitted unsealed and unsigned plans to a client and listed J. Shonman, a non-registrant, as the project team architect. And the investigative conclusions were that based on prior board action for case P17065, J. Shonman, in which the board voted to dismiss the complaint alleging that Mr. Shonman, a non-registrant, was displayed as the project team architect on a professional document for the Nectar Juice Bar project in Phoenix, Arizona. The investigation concludes that the respondent has not violated board statute ARS 32128C3. This investigation is inconclusive on whether the drawings marked owner review in the title block that were submitted to the board with the complaint were in violation of board statutes AR 32128C4 as it relates to AACR 430304D1 and ARS 32125B has occurred. Respondents demonstrated a good level of cooperation throughout the investigation and displayed a willingness to comply with the Board's Act as Practice Act. And the staff has requested board guidance on this. So let's start with the respondent. State your name.
Stacy Henson.
Okay. And feel free to express anything you'd like to express to the board right now.
Our intent was not to, the set was meant to, for an owner review. And I think it was 2 days later we sent out signed sealed documents, which had no changes to them. It did not have the issue, not for construction on there, but it did have basically for owner review. These are real quick pace documents, you know, projects. I'm the engineer of record, but the architect had sent the project out. And it did not say for construction, not for construction. Since then, when we've received the documents for this board, receiving notice of this board's review, we basically changed our whole process. I think that's all about all I have to say.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Boyce, state your name for the record.
David Boyce. As Stacy mentioned, we issued the plans for review customarily to our client, and those plans were only intended for that client because they often make even minor changes to the plans. And as Stacy mentioned, 2 days after we got their acknowledgement, they said the plans were okay. We submitted them signed and sealed for review with the jurisdiction. They went through the process. Our permit set was duly issued. We're not exactly sure how the complainant got the original set that was sent to the owner, because as a test and balance engineer, he would have been on the site much later. I think it was in December. And there should have been the set of permitted drawings with the contractor on the site that he could have used to review. So it doesn't erase the fact that the plans were sent for owner review to the owner, but we're not sure how that got downstream when there were proper signed and sealed plans on the job site or used by the contractor and anyone else.
Okay, I'll open the floor to the board for any questions, motions, anything.
Mr. Ryan, how did this end up back before us? I mean, we dealt with this case when we were looking at someone allegedly calling someone an architect who wasn't. We dismissed that case. How did this end up?
Sure, it was two separate cases. Came in with the same complaint. The first one was against Mr. J. Shulman. That was dismissed.
Right.
The sister case is this case here. So this is when we finalized the investigation.
Okay.
And the question for us, for guidance, if I may, is whether or not owner review is acceptable. Because the time, if you look at the documents, the timeline that was provided to us, the case came in, the complaint came in a month after the project was permitted and underway. And they had these plans that weren't sealed. And not, like Mr. Boyce said, we aren't sure how they obtained these. The alleged was not, he was very distant in his explanation how he obtained them and wouldn't provide us who he got them from and how they obtained those documents. But the real question for us is whether or not owner review falls into the exception in this matter.
I guess as I look at it, I think that the rules are pretty specific. It's supposed to be marked preliminary, not for construction or not for recording, but at the same time, I don't want to micromanage that language so much, but if it says for owner review on it, in my mind, if I looked at that, I would go, that's not a final professional document. And so I think they met the intent. I hear that they've changed their policies and procedures so that now they mark them not for construction. So I mean, and I'm sorry, I'm not real happy with the ledger in this one, because if you are working, because I deal with this, we end up with contractors who do pricing on preliminary drawings, and then they don't follow the permitted set where there are changes, and then they come back to me and go, there's a problem, and I go, well, you're not working off the right set of drawings. So I think the onus falls on the other professional who was doing the test and balance to have to obtain a permitted set of documents. I don't see any egregious violation of board statute or rules here, and I'll move to dismiss this case.
I agree with that.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Second.
Agreed. I have a motion and a second.
Second.
Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. And thank you, gentlemen.
Vice Chairman, the gentleman flew in last night from cross country, one from Illinois, correct? Florida?
Florida.
Well, thank you for coming, and really sorry.
Thanks for hearing us. It's not a good feeling to be in front of a board like this, so it was important to come up here.
Absolutely. Well, we appreciate you taking it seriously.
Thank you, gentlemen. Enjoy the weather.
It's not as humid as Florida.
You're welcome to stay. Okay, referring back to the sign-in sheet, the first person to sign in was Wyatt Jenkins for agenda item 7A. Mr. Jenkins, please state your name for the record.
Wyatt Allen Jenkins.
Okay, agenda item 7A is an application for certification of home inspector. We've got a background check issue here. Mr. Jenkins, do you care to elaborate or address any of this to the board?
Okay. You'll notice on there that I had an arrest in 1990, a minor possession. But prior to that, that was 28 years ago. Prior to that, zero arrests, and from 1990 to 2008, another 18 years without one. What had happened is I got in a serious accident, and I broke five ribs and then punctured my lungs, and I was prescribed prescription pain medication. And during my recovery, my father, who I was extremely close to, had passed. And that was pretty much the catalyst that sent me down the wrong road for a few years there. Just kind of didn't really care about anything anymore. But I got into a program, Washington County Drug Court. It's a 15-month intense program. And so it's been over 6 years now since I've had a drink of alcohol or anything like that. And just ready to put that behind me and move forward with my life.
I'll open it up to the board for questions.
Oh, and one more thing. It appears much worse than it is. There's multiple arrests on like the same charge. If I didn't like pay a fine or something, they'd re-arrest me on it. So it appears that there's more arrests than many of them are for the same incident.
I'd like to say something real quickly. Mr. Jenkins was just in Oregon this past week getting his criminal records for this meeting. So he showed me some of these before the meeting. So he went out there and tried to get all the information he could. So he's been pretty proactive in getting us the information we need on this case. So that's why he's on this meeting now and we don't have the background. It's because he just obtained it and got back to Arizona on Monday or something. So.
Yeah, Mr. Jenkins went to the courts and rounded them up in person.
Mr. Jenkins, what were the nature of the thefts? Did they involve anyone's entering anyone's home or anything to that effect?
Well, at that low point in my life, I always justified things that I never went in anybody's car, anybody's home. It was all retail, Costco, Home Depot, that type of thing. You have one forgery on there, and that was for altering a receipt so I could return an item to Costco, is what that is. There is an identity on there, but that was only for lying about my own identity, which you can get for that. I didn't actually assume someone else's. I have some good things I've done in life here, like here's my certificate for completing drug court, and fire chief certificate for being a good Samaritan, and I actually got my Oregon home inspection license here too. And here's another Adopt a River program where you go and clean up the highways, and there's a project coordinator for that, for public service volunteering type thing. The past 6 years of my life have been dedicated to state improvement. I was in a pretty bad spot there for a little bit.
Just, Mr. Jenkins, did Oregon interview you or request any of this information in their application process?
it's not quite as formal as this. It's regulated by the contracting board rather than the Board of Technical Registration. So there was the schooling, and there was a brief interview, but not to this extent, no.
Did they look into your background, your criminal history?
They did, but they just checked for felonies to make sure there wasn't felonies.
Okay.
Which it shows on there there's a felony, but I've never been convicted of a felony.
Is the information that you presented today, Mr. Donald, is that acceptable for us to look at here at the table, or is that something that needs to go through process?
The material would be okay for you guys to look at today as long as everybody has an opportunity to look at it, as long as you all have an equal opportunity to see it.
Talking about the certificates?
The records.
Whatever Rob has.
He just showed me the court documents prior to this board meeting, so I don't have... He has them in his possession right now. I'm going to make copies before we go and put them in his packet. So.
I need to organize them yet. It's kind of in a... I just flew back in from Oregon Sunday night. I haven't had a chance to match them all up with everything, exactly what I got from the courts.
Okay, so I hear that as we'll proceed without that information.
But I do have everything that corresponds with everything that came back from my federal background. I do have a whole stack of it here.
And Rob, did you look through the paperwork that he brought?
I did, yeah.
Do you concur with what is it?
And there was no felonies. And some of the, I believe it's in the packet, but it shows a bunch of charges, and a lot of them are the same exact thing. So.
No surprises or anything.
No surprises in there.
Yeah, like here, there was a theft too, but it shows that it's listed four times on here. So on that sheet, it would have been four times on there. Rearrest for the same thing. Same exact charge.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we recommend Mr. Jenkins as a certified home inspector.
A second.
Got a motion and a second. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you.
Good luck.
Thank you.
Good luck.
Okay, next item is case P18053, agenda item 6C2, Jose Alba. 6C2, 6 Charlie 2. This is case number 18053. Respondent's name is Jose Alba. On February 8th, 2018, the board received a complaint alleging respondent offered to provide stamped plans and the ability to secure building permits for residential, commercial, and industrial tenant improvement projects, and displayed photographs of the seal of Richard Moore, a registered architect, City of Phoenix, Planning and Development Department stamp on a Craigslist advertisement on or about January 31st, 2018. The investigative conclusions are that this investigation concludes that the respondents have committed the following violations: ARS 32145, two, in that the respondent advertised or displayed a device to indicate he is qualified to practice a board-regulated profession without board registration, and ARS 32141, in that the respondent firm practiced or offered to practice board-regulated profession without board registration. The staff recommends the proposed consent agreement encompassing the following order: if not signed within 30 days, proceed to formal hearing. Assurance of discontinuous, civil penalty of $1,000, cost of investigation of $522. Mr. Alba, this is your opportunity to address the board. Please state your name for the record and feel free to speak.
Thank you. My name is Jose Alba. I am a drafter. I believe what's in question was I had a title block that Richard Moore stamped for a barbershop It was, my numbers could be off a little bit, but it was tiny. It was 1,032 square feet or something, very small. I submitted to Sean Thatcher in Glendale, anything under 3,000 square feet does not require a registrar architect or a stamp from an engineer. Now, because I had, again, I could be wrong, but because I had some chairs in the lobby, that took the occupancy to two overs to where now they needed a stamp. So I reached out to Richard Moore, to see if he could help me, which he did, and he sent me a contract, and we signed it, and he charged me. Now, what I didn't know is that I couldn't use my title block, but it had to be his title block. So I'm not denying what I did. I don't think I did anything wrong, and if I did, I'm going to own up to it, but I truly believe that I didn't do anything wrong, and honestly, I think that's why we're here, because I guess I had a stamp. So. And I do have a letter, sorry, stating that Rick Moore did review red lines. He actually gave me some red lines. I corrected the red lines, and then I submitted to the city of Glendale. So.
Is that letter in our records?
It is.
Okay.
Yes, in our packet. Mr. Alba, but you paid Mr. Moore to seal the documents, correct? He did not. The client did not pay him, and then he paid you to draft them, or how did the money?
No, so I'm a draftsman. Sometimes I do some drafting for him as well, but I didn't. I guess at that point I had already charged the client to draw, so I was kind of in a. I had to get him stamped, so that's how I called him, and then he sent me the contract. So I guess yes, I did hire him to provide a seal.
Because he invoiced you, correct? And then you wrote him a check for sealing the documents?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
What I see here in this case is two separate issues. I see some allegations that perhaps there was some intent to advertise the offering of architectural services on your website. And I want to segregate the two, because then I have a plan stamping issue that is not this gentleman's responsibility. And so I'd like to kind of look at it from that standpoint. Some of these documents are a little hard to read, so bear with me here. Did you look at their website, and did the website actually say that they offered architectural engineering services?
On the website,
I can't find it.
It was an ad on Craigslist, and it showed the plans, a picture of the plans, and him stating that he can get projects done within a certain amount of time, stamped and sealed. So it wasn't an actual website; it was just an advertisement on Craigslist.
Okay. And that's how I get most of my work done. I mean, I do a lot of additions and residential, and you know, the gentleman that, I guess, reported me or brought me to the board. I don't know if he feels like I'm taking jobs from architects, which I'm not. I don't think there's an architect that likes to go to the city and sit there and get the permit, you know, and wait. You know, and that's what I do. I do the smaller jobs. I'm not out there trying to build a hotel or anything like that. You know what I mean? So, and I know I can't do that, by the way.
But the concern I have is you have an image of Mr. Moore seal on your Craigslist posting.
I have taken all that.
Okay, well, no, I understand that. But at the time of this was brought to our attention, that was posted on the website. We have strict regulations for you need to have somebody in your employ who is or an owner of the company who is. The responsible registrant for work that they are going to be producing and sealing out of your firm, and it doesn't appear that Mr. Moore is a member of your former firm. There's no firm registration card for your firm on file, so that's where we have a problem.
And I understand. I truly understand.
So I think I'll let some other people talk. I'm hogging the podium here.
Ed, I'm looking at page 680 in the packet. And I see at the bottom of the web page, there's keywords of architecture, drafting, draftsman, design, permitting. And I don't know if any of these words are raise any hairs with you.
I guess I'm not real.
Sorry, I don't mean to. Those are keywords. So when somebody searches in Craigslist, so that those ads come up. So those are just kind of like Google AdWords, something similar to that.
Craigslist put it in.
So I don't know. I'm not a tech person, so I don't know if Craigslist automatically populates that or.
If I was to sell a couch on Craigslist, I'd put living spaces, you know, IKEA at the bottom. So if anybody's searching those, that keyword would bring up my ad.
Okay. But if this gentleman included the terms architect, architecture, engineering, anything like that in his ad to help move things up, then there's a, in my opinion, there's a violation there. I know some of these sites will dump people into a category just because they say design, house design, and they'll dump them into architecture, and that person has no control over that. But obviously, these keywords were populated by the respondent, and that's where I have concerns.
Is that correct, though? Did you provide those keywords, or did the
I entered those keywords.
You did
try to, like, if somebody, like Sean said, if somebody's searching for like an addition or a remodel. So then when you type those in, it would bring my ad to the top of the list.
Is there a way to show the distinction of your services and where it cut off from an architect? You'd mention 1,000 square feet or whatever it might
be. There is, and that's why in the city of Glendale, when you pull up their website, it says, it clearly states in that document I did give to Sean as well, it clearly states anything under 3,000 square feet does not require an architect. And that's the reason why I even took on that job. Because if I needed a stamp, on that project, by the way, I actually lost money because I had to get an electrical engineer, I had to get an architect, and I had to get somebody else. The plans are right here. They were sealed. I believe a mechanical engineer as well. So I didn't make any money. I ended up actually paying $400 out of my pocket just because if I take on a job, and I give you my word, yeah, I can get it done. I'm going to get it done. I'm going to try my hardest to try to get it done. Now, that's not to say that I'm going to, you know, by the way, I do want to state something. Rick Moore does not seal any plant. All his seals are wet seals. So I don't have an electronic copy. I don't stamp plans. I have to meet or go to his office. He reviews them, and then he literally stamps them. It's a wet seal. So there's no way of me duplicating it. So, and that's why I feel like there's, you know, I don't really think there's any more.
During the investigation, I do feel Mr. Alva had the best intentions on taking on this project since it was under the 3,000 square feet. I think he ran into the problem. It required a seal, and he was in a position where he had to provide plans.
See, Wilson Engineering, he sealed the electrical.
Well, and I think we're hanging a lot on 3,000 square feet, but we also have to look at the occupancy load factor, and it's also 19 or more, more than 19 occupants.
22.
And they had 22, so that put him over the cusp of a further part of the exemption.
And I didn't think I went over until May, until the city of Glendale had reviewed it once already. Then they told me the occupancy was over. Then they said you need sealed this, and this.
So then you went out and got the engineer to seal it, but they just did not use his title block.
Correct.
Which and threw things off.
You know, believe me, if I would have known this was going to be an issue, I...
Now, is he behaving as more of a general contractor?
No.
Or he's hiring?
No. Here's my overall concern with this. We have a person soliciting for work on Craigslist who uses terms like architecture, architectural, engineering, words like that, that, and says we can get stamped plans, but they don't have them, so they're not a firm registered with this board. They really can't offer those kinds of services. So we have someone offering to practice without benefit of registration with this board. So that's one issue. What I'm seeing is another issue, and we'll be asking staff to open an investigation against Mr. Moore, because it appears that this gentleman's drawing stuff, taking it over, and then paying Mr. Moore to seal it. And that's what I have. That's what we call plan stamping, and that's not allowed by statute either. His documents are not prepared by Mr. Moore's bona fide employee. I actually see a bigger problem with that than what I'm seeing here. I think this gentleman got caught kind of in the middle of quite honestly, I would disagree with the City of Glendale's code interpretation, because the IBC Chapter 10 says that for B occupancies, if you have 1,000 square feet, that's 10 occupants, because it's calculated on the gross. It doesn't matter how many chairs he showed in the lobby. So he was technically under the exemption, but Glendale is allowed to have a more restrictive interpretation of what needs a seal than what we would require. So he was kind of stuck.
I'm kind of interested in the City of Glendale was so reluctant to hand over the plans. Is that normal?
That I found that really irritating.
Yeah.
Mr. Wong was too.
Run into that?
Yeah. Well, okay. We can't even find it.
We've never had that issue before.
And the city was quoting a copyright infringement concern?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. It's almost like they need to, we almost need to send a letter to Glendale at some point.
We had Mr. Donald call for us,
good.
And he explained the situation.
Thank you, Mr. Donald.
We didn't have to pay somebody.
That subpoena shook him up?
We paid good money for the plans.
Oh, did we?
We did.
Oh, we did. For releasing, we did.
Wow.
Yeah. What plans are you talking about?
The ones that were on file at the City of Glendale.
Yes.
For this, yeah.
Well, I think, I mean, I agree with Ed on this. I mean, I this is split into two things.
Right.
But,
yeah.
You know, for Mr. Alva's part, I think the problem is the Craigslist ad. It has the words, but it also has the photos of a set of drawings with the stamp on it.
And I appreciate that you've been proactive in taking that down.
Right. If you're the public and you're looking at that, I'm thinking, okay, if I see a set of drawings on a website with a stamp on it that's signed, I think the public would have a reasonable expectation that this person is a registered architect. So, I mean, even though it's not his name, still, I think that's, you know, kind of the perception you'd have on it. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, the other part is a totally different thing. That's a totally different, you know,
sticking to case. This for Mr. Alva, do you think the penalty of $1,000 is...
I think it's too high.
I think it is too high. I was just going to go there. I'm looking at maybe doing $500.
That's a reasonable thing.
Insurance of discontinuance,
and cost of investigation.
Cost of investigation. And, you know, Mr. Alba, it might be worth you registering your firm with the board, just so,
well,
you know.
If he has a registered record, who is on
that's right,
the
so
payroll.
We can't do that.
I'm just addressing.
Yeah.
May I ask just for some clarification on his keywords? What do we need to strike? Architect? Architecture.
Anything that implies engineering.
So the electrical. Three things.
Well, I think architect is probably
the
worst
is the most
one.
Egregious
architecture
one.
Is not really a. You
okay.
Know,
so architect.
I mean, I would use words like design, drafting.
Yeah.
You know, things like that.
Yeah.
I think those are safe.
Construction contracting, contractor, framing, painting.
Now you have to be
floor.
Careful there, because if you're not a licensed contractor, you could fall
right.
In.
That's not our board's
hot
problem.
Water
so.
with the registrar contractor.
So take contractor out.
No,
well, I don't know.
No,
we're not
that's
go
not
there.
Our issue.
That's not
our.
But what's
see registered contractor?
Well, that's again, that's not.
I would say architect is probably the worst.
Yeah.
You know, the one that's mm-hmm. shouldn't be in there.
Yeah.
You know, I'd say design, anything like design, drafting, any of
those are fine.
Is acceptable. Mm-hmm. Even the word architecture.
It's a gray area.
Yeah.
I'm not real keen on it because it still implies the practice of architecture.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to make a motion that we offer a consent agreement consisting of the following: assurance of discontinuance until such time they are properly registered, a civil penalty in the amount of $500, cost of investigation in the amount of $522, and move to formal hearing if not signed within 30 days.
I'll second.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion?
Payment plan within 30.
Within 30. Well, signed within 30.
Signed within 30, so payment within 60 days.
Mr. Montgomery, you good with that?
I'm good with that, sir.
Okay. We have the motion and the second. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passed.
And Mr. Chair, I'd like to ask staff to open an investigation against Mr. Moore for aiding and abetting. I also am not real excited that, I don't know, was the subpoena just rejected by him or non-deliverable? It's really hard to tell. I'm not, you know, if this person is practicing, then obviously we need to have a current address for the registrant on file. If they have changed addresses in the last 30 days, they should have notified us. So let's track him down. Please.
Do you know where he is?
Yeah, his office is on I-17 in Greenwood.
There you go.
Thank
you.
Mr. Alba, he knows where he's at.
Thank you.
I have nothing to hide. Can I say something real quick? Well, you know what? It doesn't matter. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Good luck. With all due respect, I hope I never have to come back.
Oh, we hope that, too.
Okay, the next item on the sign-in sheet is case number P-17071, agenda item number 6D1, and Claire Adams is signed up for this. Claire, would you approach the table here and state your name for the record? This is item 6D1.
Claire G. Adams.
Thank you and good morning. I'll read the case details here. The synopsis of the complaint is: on January 25th, 2017, the board received a complaint alleging that respondent and respondent firm used registration of Claire Adams PE Civil 42718 without his knowledge to fraudulently prepare and seal an altered soil investigation report and building pad compaction certification report for property located in Peoria, Arizona in November and December of 2016. The address is 9831 West Villalindo Drive in Peoria. And the investigative conclusions are: this investigation concludes that the respondent has violated ARS 32-145-4 in that the respondent and respondent firm used the registration of Claire Adams without his knowledge to fraudulently prepare and seal altered soil investigation report and building pad compaction certification report. Respondent demonstrated a good level of cooperation throughout the investigation and displayed a willingness to comply with the Board's Practice Act. And I will clarify that the respondent is Efren Espino. Is the respondent present? No. Okay, the respondent's not here. Okay, so Mr. Adams, this would be your time to address the Board.
Great. Thank you. What happened, this is a custom home in Peoria. The sewage report that was designed for the subdivision, it was an old subdivision sewage report, the city approved that for use, and so they were building the building pad out there. We did the testing on the building pad during the construction of the pad. We did do a building pad compaction certification for this project. We certified it to the old subdivision soils report. Everything was fine. We later received an email from the home buyer of this custom home, he was concerned, he said in his email, he was concerned that the documents look altered and asked us, asked me if I would verify these two documents. The doc, he needed them verified, they were going to submit to the bank, I think, for a loan draw for construction purposes. We reviewed those documents. They were indeed forged documents. They were actually my documents from different projects. Well, I should back up. The source report was from a different project. Down the road, he took a different source report from a different project, changed the address, project number, and then the for the building pad certification, he took the certification that we did for that project and just altered it so that it would fit his needs. The reason he did this, the original subdivision soil report, they found expansive clay soils on this project, and so they wanted the foundation to beef up a little bit. I did, when I talked to Efren, he mentioned that he admitted that they forged these documents. The purpose of it was to reduce their construction costs. They didn't want to pay the extra construction costs for the beefier foundation, beefing foundation, reinforced foundation. So he's admitted to the forgery. I later received a phone call from Karina from their office. She was a little bit, I don't think hysterical is the word, but she was very, very concerned. I believe she was quitting the job that day. She said she's headed to the city to clear her name. She mentioned to me it was an ongoing practice at this office to forge documents, including plans. I tried to be responsible. I called the city, made them aware of the situation. The building official there, Dennis Chase. That's really, I think, all I have to say about it.
Mr. Adams, keep in mind I'm a land surveyor. I'm not an engineer. But how would the public be harmed by this action? Can you explain that?
The person buying the house is a potential for damage to the structure. He was trying to utilize a foundation that wasn't designed for the expansive clay soils there. So potential damage to the structure is what it amounts to.
So what's the status of the construction based? Was the pad prepared in accordance with your report or in accordance with the forged document?
The original soil report was not my soil report. It's called CIT, Construction Inspection Assessment Soil Report, okay. Old subdivision report. My original pad certification was certified to that old subdivision soil report, so it wasn't my soil report.
But it wasn't for this address, right? Your pad certification wasn't for this address, it was for a different address?
No, the pad certification was for this address.
Okay.
He just changed he altered. On my certification report, it states the depth of the required footing. They altered that.
Oh, okay. So you did do a pad certification. They just changed. They didn't take one from a different lot and change the address. They used the one for this lot but changed the findings.
Not on the pad certification, but they did on the soils report.
Okay.
So they brought in a different soils report that had soil conditions that were more amenable to just digging
Correct.
Foundations and putting
Correct.
Pouring some concrete rather than having to do an over X and bring in engineered fill, or obviously
That's
trying to save money.
And that soil report was one of my soil reports from a different project.
But it was
okay.
a different site, who knows
That's correct.
How far away.
We had been working with this company for a few years, probably half a dozen homes a year that we did with them. So he had a number of reports to choose from.
Okay.
So did the owner, I guess, who requested you to consult on this material wind up with an inferior or a deteriorated footing as a consequence of this fraudulent information?
I honestly don't know the answer to that question, what happened in terms of construction. We have to get the city involved to find out what did they actually build. I don't know the answer to that question.
Okay. Well, we have a signed consent agreement on this. I mean,
which I suppose we can accept. I mean, the big thing, I mean, this is definitely a criminal, referable criminal.
Yeah. And I guess I'm looking at the consent agreement, and I don't think $1,000 is enough.
I don't either. No.
We've got two known violations. We've got a pad certification that was forged, and we've got a soils report that was forged. And to me, there's the potential for $4,000 right there in civil penalties.
But it's been signed.
Well, it's all right. We can reject it. You don't have to accept this.
We didn't sign.
Yeah, we've never seen this.
Other than...
So, yeah, and I agree. I mean, I think these are egregious violations, harm to public, everything else, and I think it's definitely a criminal matter.
And I'm looking at what we assessed in another case that was very similar to this, where they were basically just putting somebody's kind of stamp on.
Right.
And
well, that was those, yeah, yeah those pad certifications on that one. Yeah.
There were 20 of them.
May I add to this? The plans that they submitted to the city of Peoria, they did put down the altered source report. They have to put a source report on the plans. This is a source report from the They did use the altered source report information on the plans that they submitted. It wasn't, there's a picture of it here. I don't know if you guys have all that information, but the city official, Dennis Chase, he took a picture of that to verify what it looked like, and it was indeed the forged source report that they put on the plans. They later came in and rescinded the plans once they realized that there was a potential for issues. They wanted to pull those plans out. So they're trying to, cover their butts. So, and one more thing. Earlier this year, I was subpoenaed for records for another project. And it turns out they are the contractor that is a different homeowner is going after it. Apparently, there may be some forgery on that project as well. I'm not for certain on that. I haven't received any proof of it yet. I don't know the status of that case, that civil case, but again, it appears it may be kind of a practice. As this lady who worked in her office stated, it was a practice.
So this group is contractors. Can they do this sort of thing? I mean, don't they need engineers? I mean, that's why we have engineers and soil folks. I mean,
the problem is they're forging documents. They're putting this gentleman at risk.
Yeah.
A potential risk exposure, because if nothing ever came up and something then happened to that house, and they see a soils report with his seal on it, he's back before this board trying to defend himself for something he didn't do.
Right.
Exactly.
Well, not just before this board. Potential court.
Court.
You know, everything else.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, I agree. I think we should, I think rejecting this and then coming up with something that's more harsh. And then criminal, and I also think since they are a contractor, staff should talk to the register of contractors and have them look into this as well.
Yep, right. Yep. So, Chair, I'd like to offer a motion that we reject the signed consent agreement and offer a new consent agreement, including assurance of discontinuance, a civil penalty in the amount of $4,000. $2,000 for the forgery of the pad certification and $2,000 for the forgery of the soils report and cost of investigation. And if not signed, within 30 days, go to formal hearing.
I'll second that.
Yeah. We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Hearing none. Those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes.
I think staff needs to
refer
to the AG's office for criminal and contact the register contractors and let them know our concerns.
Now will this help Mr. Adams? Things go awry down the road that we went through this exercise.
I would hope so.
Maybe.
Yeah.
And I would say that if anything else rises, to please advise us.
Okay, I will.
Yes. This doesn't prevent us from opening future cases.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Abbott.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Okay, next on the sign-in sheet is case H118016, item 6D2, and I apologize for the last name here. The first name is Chris. It looks like Koseha. Koseha?
Okay.
Please state your name for the record.
Christopher Koseha.
Quick second here. Okay, case number HI18016. Synopsis of the complaint is on October 17th, 2017, the board received a complaint alleging that the respondent failed to observe and report on the condition of an HVAC system, the ductwork in the attic, and the air return filter during a home inspection at 1865 South Hall in Mesa, Arizona. And that was on July 12, 2017. The investigative conclusions are that the respondent has violated board statutes 32-128 as it relates to R-4-33-01-01, and that the respondent failed to conduct a home inspection in accordance with the standards of professional practice for Arizona home inspectors, and ARS 32-127-D, ARS 32-144-E, and ARS 32-145-1, in that respondent engaged in the practice of home inspection on July 12, 2017 while his certification was in a delinquent status, and ARS 32-121 and ARS 32-141A, in that the respondent firm conducted a home inspection on July 12, 2017 without registration with the board. We do have a signed consent agreement encompassing the following: a letter of reprimand, administrative penalty in the amount of $500, and cost of investigation in the amount of $295. And, sir, this is your opportunity to speak to the board, so if you have anything to offer, please bring it forth.
Thank you. Just a real quick note, one of the reasons why I'm in this predicament was I've been a home inspector for a while now, and I am a subcontractor, a 1099 employee for the owner of my company is Warren Egbert with Home Advantage Home Inspections. We meet probably once a month, and during probably the last year and a half or so, he moved. His address has always been under my name, and every time I renew, I try to put a little post-it note to please send to my home address. And during the move, I guess when he forwarded his mail, my registration being my name with his address must have got lost in the mail. When I got the certified letter saying I had some mail at the office, I actually didn't get it. My boss got it. He tried to pick it up, but it's my name with his address, so he could not get it. So I went to the post office, and because my ID showed my name with my address, I had to go three different times and finally pick somebody who was having a good day or something to let me get my letter. So my point is, my address has been wrong for the last at least 7 years, and that's what put me into the predicament of not having my license current due to being lost in the mail.
Interesting turn of events.
I was just looking for leniency. I tried to be an upholding or an outstanding citizen and obeying all the rules, so.
Any comments, questions from the board?
Mr. Chairman, I move that we accept the signed consent agreement.
Second?
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes. Thank you, sir.
Hey, did we forward the last case to the contractors?
Mm-hmm.
Would they go to criminal? Would that be the route?
No, just
would that be from us to criminal? Or?
No, and then AG.
Okay. Okay, next on the sign-in sheet, I have, it looks like 6B1, case number 6B1, and that would be Chris Benfield is here to speak. Please state your name.
Christopher Benfield.
Thank you for coming, Mr. Benfield. I'm going to pull this up on the screen here real quick. Okay, the synopsis of the complaint is on January 23rd, 2018, the board received a complaint alleging that the respondent failed to accurately report on the condition of a roof, a leaking water heater, non-functional electrical outlets and light switches, and the improper functioning of an AC unit during a home inspection at 4802 East Albuquerque Drive in Phoenix, Arizona on or about November 27, 2017. And investigative conclusions. This investigation concludes that only de minimis violations of the Board's Practice Act were identified during this investigation. The staff recommendation is letter of concern to be issued by the board, reminding respondent to be more observant and clear in the items being addressed in the home inspection reports. Mr. Benfield, would you like to add anything to that, or do you have any questions of us?
No, I have the concerns they had with some of the wording on the report I have changed, so I've got that all taken care of, taking that out and fixed it to more of their liking.
Okay. I'll open up the floor to the board for any questions.
Mr. Chair, I move that we send a letter of concern reminding respondent to be more observant and clear in the items being addressed in his home inspection reports.
I'll second.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Hearing none. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. The next item I have is 6F1, Steve Bartolome. I apologize if I butchered your last name, sir.
It's fine, I'm used to it, sir.
How is it pronounced?
Bartolome.
Bartolome.
Yes, sir.
Okay, well, now we've got to state that for the record. So.
Oh, Stephen Bartolome.
Thank you, sir. Okay, this is case HI-18033. Synopsis of the complaint. On June 4th, 2018, the board received a complaint alleging that the respondent, while conducting a home inspection at 455 South Mesa Drive, number 102, Mesa, Arizona, respondent accessed and searched through personal items in the drawers of a dresser located in the homeowner's bedroom. And the investigative conclusions are that the respondent has violated board statute ARS 32-128C2 as it relates to AAC R430-10113, and that respondent committed gross negligence in the practice of a home inspection by demonstrating a substantial deviation of professional practice from the standard professional care as exercised by members of the registrant's profession. Respondent demonstrated a lack of cooperation throughout the investigation and displayed an unwillingness to comply with the Board's Practice Act. Staff recommendations. Consider summarily suspending respondent's certification as a home inspector or offer a proposed consent agreement encompassing the following order. If not signed within 10 days, proceed to hearing. Voluntary surrender. This is your opportunity to address the board. So please do.
All I can do is apologize. I am human. Humans do stupid things. I have no excuse or no explanation for what possessed me to inspect that dresser. The video is sickening. I can tell you, though, if you look at the video, I'm inspecting the dresser. I'm not pulling things out. I'm not doing inappropriate things. I'm not pulling the homeowner's diary out and reading it. I don't know what possessed me to look at that dresser. I'm human. I made a serious lapse in judgment. I am not a bad person. I am not a danger to the public. I've been inspecting since 2003. I've never had a single complaint. I've done over 8,000 inspections. I was stupid. I was stupid for not being forthcoming, not coming forward and being honest and talking. I was scared. It's not an excuse. There's no excuse. I wasn't confident that the board would grant me any empathy or any consideration. I watched the board take my cousin's license away for missing two license renewals with no empathy, and that scared the heck out of me. And then, like I said, not an excuse. Mr. Will is just a tiny bit intimidating, you know, stressing to me that he's a former law enforcement officer and good luck defending this. And my statement about the video camera and being videotaped in the bathroom, that's 100% true. That is absolutely 100% true. That homeowner had a video camera pointing in the bathroom videotaping people. That's not a lie. That is 100% true. And I regret that I didn't call Mesa PD that day. You know, and Mr. Will told me that too. Well, that's not illegal. That statute has to do with people videotaping under toilets and things like that. And that is absolutely not true. I've got the statute written down, and it is illegal to videotape in a bedroom or a bathroom. That doesn't justify what I did. I don't know why I inspected that dresser, why I looked through those drawers, but I wasn't doing anything illegal or immoral. Sorry. If the board can consider anything other than taking my license away, I can assure you that I will never be in front of this board again. I will accept any fine, as high a dollar amount as you would consider. I would accept being on probation for a lifetime if that's what you would consider. I'm not a bad person. I'm not a danger to the public. That's all I can say. But I was stupid. I was completely stupid. And I shouldn't have tried to lie my way out of it. And that's all I have to say.
Thank you. I'll open the floor up to the board for questions.
Can I, Mr. Chairman, could I ask the staff to comment on any of this?
As far as I know, Mr. Donald, is there any problem with that?
Well, when you say to comment,
I mean, the, I guess the video record, that was reviewed by staff. And all of the findings as presented in our material here confirms that.
If the board would like, we could go into executive session for the board to view the video if you haven't already viewed it. We certainly could go into executive session for that. We would have to do that because it's confidential as part of an investigation file at present, but we certainly.
Did you watch it as part of the, you got it in the packet?
No, I haven't reviewed it.
Oh,
no.
Well, it'd probably be a good idea for that to happen.
Make sure that he's got it.
Because it's a question of intent.
I would need a motion.
Right. I mean, it was sent with the, you know, with the board packet, so, but if you didn't see it, I mean, I think it's prudent for all the board members to have all the same information, so.
Yes.
Yeah, and quite frankly, considering the nature of what the board is considering today, I think for the record, we absolutely should ensure that all board members have reviewed all available information regarding this. But if the board would like to go into executive sessions for confidential information and legal advice.
Mr. Chair, I move we go into executive session for confidential information and legal advice.
Second.
You can ask the investigators to stay if you want, if you have questions about the information.
So we're going to go to, we're going to vote on going to executive session with the investigators being part of that session. So all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. We are now in executive session at 10:12, according to my computer.
recording.
Okay, it is 10:36 a.m. and we are back in open session discussing item 6. Where did it go? 6F1 of the agenda. And I'll open the floor for board discussion.
Mr. Chair, if I could just give you some thoughts that I have. Maybe one question. Was the home inspection done properly?
I'm sorry, what was that, sir?
Was the home inspection done properly?
Absolutely.
No questions on the home inspection?
No questions on the home inspection. It was just my lack of judgment by opening that dresser.
So that gets to one of the points here. Both inspectors of the EAC reviewed this case, and they were both alarmed by what happened and the fact that the respondent went into the dresser and was poking around. I think if we had a record of this for an applicant, they might never get their registration. As that type of move, you would let somebody like that into somebody's home. But that's not the case right here. And I'm concerned that he did it, and I'm concerned that he broke some ethics to his or what he does for a living. And I don't know why he wouldn't do it again, and I'm not sure if he ever did it in the past. Just here in this case, we actually had tape of it. So it makes it difficult, but I don't think we can consider that what may have been. We have what did happen. And it seems to me that his record is good, or quite a long history. And I'm personally torn between saying you shouldn't be a home inspector anymore versus you made one stupid mistake, then you made a mistake by lying about it, and now we're here, and what do we do? How do we protect the citizens versus a potential mistake that might never happen again?
And if I can respond, if you're done, I don't care what's in people's drawers. I have to open drawers every day. When I walk into a walk-in closet and it's got classy closets, I have to check all those drawers. I move things over because when a client calls me, when they move in and yells at me because the drawers are gorilla glued together, it's a part of my job. I move clients' personal things under sinks all day long. I don't know why I opened it.
I understand that, and the AC members brought that up. But this is a freestanding drawer, so it's probably something you shouldn't have done.
No, I shouldn't.
It was
have
the
done.
Way
Absolutely.
It was set up.
And I shouldn't have lied about it.
And Steve, I mean, I see your point, and you know, the point is, you know, I believe this should be something that administrative law judge, you know, goes through the evidence and interviews witnesses and everything else and, you know, provides this gentleman with a fair hearing and you know, those results are made, you know, are written up in a statement. And, you know, the question to get to that point is, to protect the public, do we do a, you know, a suspension of the license until that process goes through? You know, if there is a concern about, you know, public safety and welfare of this happening, you know, potentially happening between now and the time that all this process can play out. You know, so that's kind of my, you know, kind of my thoughts on this. I would rather leave this up to, you know, the actual legal system, you know, to determine these, you know, determine if this is actually something that rises to the level of, you know, a complete suspension or what, you know. But, you know, if we have either, you know, we're going to have to do the hearing's going to have to be done one way or the other. I think my point is, do we need to protect the public until that process goes through? So that's kind of my thoughts on it.
Just some observations, Mr. Chair. I mean, I know, even as stated in the EAC assessor reports, that opening a drawer for functionality, of course, is one level. Another is to actually poke around in it, as was observed on the video, is quite another. Secondly, to misstate that or lie after the fact, both in writing and in words, to a representative of the state of Arizona, is a rises to another level of misconduct that probably should be brought to the attention of the hearing. So I think there's a significant character and practice issue here that I think we need to consider the safety of the public for future inspections.
And there's a difference between opening drawers and kitchen cabinets that
That's
are
right.
built in, and that when the house sells will go with the house, or a built-in closet, or built-in cabinets in the garage that aren't going to leave. I mean, there's personal property and there's a part of the house. So, and as a home inspector, the standard practice is to inspect the house, not the personal property.
I think I agree, what you guys are saying. I think there's some level of discipline that we need to discuss. I'm not sure it's this. I agree with it going to a judge. I also think that Mr. Bartolome realizes he made a big mistake. He admits to it. And, we're in the business of giving people second chances, too. I think you've been compelling in your reasoning. I would hope you wouldn't do this again. I think that
like you said, I would accept lifetime probation if that's what you deem. Any fines, administrative costs for wasting your time and wasting the investigator's time by not just being honest and coming forward.
And I see your point, Mr. Jones, but here's another way I look at it. Let's say we don't do anything, or we do some, minor penalty or something, and this ends up on the news, and 10 people come forward and say, hey, I have this same issue. Have we really protected the public? Not saying that'll happen, but that's why
putting that in front of a judge. We never talk about that. What about the next 10 people that it happens to? We never really talk about, we always make a decision, and then sometimes I don't agree with it, but we do it, and then I always worry about, well, what about the next person that's harmed? What happens if it gets on the news? What happens if it comes for us? I'm thinking, wow, we didn't do our job right. I agree that something needs to happen on this, some form of discipline. I'm not sure what it is. But, this business of regulating practices and where we are now and giving people a second chance, it's just something that I'm thinking about.
Sure, I'd like to comment on. I agree everything that's been said so far. I think there is a problem here that needs to be investigated further. And I think the legal system will help bear a final decision on this. But I think I would be more receptive to maybe a lesser consideration had he not lied, purposely lied, and tried in writing and in verbal. So I think I agree. This is a much more serious case to that level. But we have an obligation to the general public as well. So I think this requires some immediate action.
I would agree with the immediate action, Jack. I'm going to stand up for the alleger here. Here's a person that their trust is gone. Will she ever be able to trust a home inspector again, ever? And thank God she didn't stick this thing on YouTube and say all home inspectors are bad people. And that's not saying that you're a bad person at all.
I have all those same thoughts.
There's there's a breach of trust here, a big breach of trust with the public. And I really need to focus on the alleger here and protecting the alleger and addressing her concerns. And then we have a second breach of trust here with the board itself when the respondent came in and was interviewed and denied everything, apparently. It wasn't until the film was brought out that he acknowledged this. Now, maybe he didn't understand he was being filmed. I'm not sure. I'm not going to get into that. But I just see two major points here that are very unsettling to me. And I think that the public has been harmed, and we have no assurance that they won't be harmed in the future. And that's how I feel about it.
Mr. Chair, I have a side question in the sense of when you do an inspection. Is there a way to do an inspection and have a second party there? Not necessarily an inspector, but maybe the real estate agent or somebody there with you or in the house with you that can sign off and say, you went around and you did your thing.
That is a possibility. It's not a common practice in Arizona.
I wouldn't expect it to be.
In many other states it is, where the realtor has to be at the inspection the entire time, but there is no, it's not a common practice in Arizona.
Is that something we could require if we pursue the other course or the legal angle or whatever, that if he, from that point till it's seriously decided, if he does a home inspection, he has to have, say, the realtor, the agent there. And which would be a third party, not somebody that owns the home, but the agent.
If that is available, I personally would be inclined to let that come through an administrative law judge's recommendation. I don't know that I'd make that recommendation myself, but that's just my personal thought.
Sure.
Legally, the board under 32128.6 can impose probation requirements best adapted to protect public safety, health, and welfare. It's intentionally pretty open to leave the board able to create probation requirements that would satisfy the individual case. I think legally the bigger question would be the length of the probation, because we would not be able to do any kind of indefinite probation for the rest of your career. The probation is meant to be to have a rehabilitation function to or an oversight function, but not a permanent type of function. But I don't see legally why the board couldn't, especially in the context of some kind of an agreement where that becomes part of a consent agreement. I don't see why the board couldn't have some kind of a condition like that if voluntarily accepted by the person. But again, I would want to have some kind of set term.
We have to make some kind of ruling here as a board. Can we just refer it to the judge, the administrative judge? Or we have to
make the board some kind of believes today that there is sufficient information to move forward with as an end of the case, but did not want to make a determination about a summary suspension today. I believe that yes, the board would be able to refer it the way it's agenda. So the board would be able to just refer it.
Can I make one more little statement? I don't want to do this to anybody else. I would prefer you guys make a decision today. And if your decision is the first consent agreement that says I give up my license, just say that. I don't want to drag these people to court. I don't want this homeowner. I don't want the realtor. I don't want the broker. I don't want to. I've inconvenienced enough people already. I don't want to do this to anybody else. I don't want to have to make this lady come face me in court or in front of a judge. I made a huge mistake, and that's the end of it. I prefer you guys just decide something today. And if the original consent agreement is what you decide, that my license goes away, then I guess just say that and tell me how many days I have to sign it.
Are you voluntarily surrendering your license?
I would prefer not. I would prefer you to give me a second chance, give me a $10,000 fine, put me on a year's probation or 2 years or 5 years. It doesn't matter. I've had 3 jobs in my entire life. I was in the Army for 4 years. I worked for Xerox for 18 years. When I worked for Xerox, I was on military bases and nuclear power plants. I'm not a bad person. I know how to behave myself. I don't know why I inspected that dresser. I don't. And it's not something that would ever happen again. So I'm asking if you can make a determination today and find me and put me on probation and give me a second chance, you will never see my face or hear my name again. You've never seen it in 8,000 inspections since 2003, and you'll never see it again. But if you can't do that, I don't want to drag these people to court. I don't want to do that. I don't think that's fair to them. I don't want. Because now the wife that told the husband, that told the realtor, that told the broker, that told the investigator, I don't want to inconvenience all these people, and every one of them would be subpoenaed. I don't want to do that to people. I really don't.
Mr. Donald, is it fair to say that if we take action, it's going to follow due process, and it's going to take time and follow process? Is that correct, with the exception of us revoking a license today, which I don't think we can do, can we?
Well, that's a very tricky question.
Okay.
Any course of action the board takes is going to comply with due process.
Correct.
There's not a course of action I would let you take.
And this may not end today. I mean, that's my point.
Right.
If when we act, we will act in a way that it won't be over today. Is that a fair statement to say to the respondent, to address his concerns of a minute ago?
Unless he does an involuntary voluntary suspension or surrender.
Oh, if he signs, yeah.
He does a voluntary surrender. Yeah, he signs a consent agreement, it's done.
So apparently the only thing that we can see at this table to end this today would be a voluntary surrendering of the license. Otherwise, the action that we follow will follow due process.
Well, or we can come up with a counter, different consent agreement that involves some other level of disciplinary action that if he's willing to sign, it stops there as well.
Legally speaking, anything but a consent agreement will wind up going to a hearing at some point, whether it's a hearing for summary suspension or a hearing, just go to the complaint notice, a hearing for revocation or other discipline. Anything except a consent agreement will result in a hearing.
Thank you. Thank you, Ed. I just want to be clear with you that this may take time.
I get it, and that's all I was asking was if there was some second proposal to the consent agreement to change it to a large fine and probation and anything like that, I'll sign it immediately. I'm not going to argue about this. I would like to, for everyone's sake, make this go away and not have to drag all these people to a court hearing. That's what I was asking. If there's anything you can do to change that consent agreement instead of revoking my license, to fine me and put me on probation.
Well, if it was just a fine issue, it would be pretty simple. I mean, I don't think that's what we're struggling with.
I get it. You're trying to protect the public, and there's no guarantee. There's no guarantee. There's no guarantee with anything.
Right.
Except, I mean, you know,
which doesn't mean a whole lot.
I guess, you know, your thought of part of the consent agreement would be that every home inspector, he does in the future, he has to have someone, you know, accompany him throughout the house. And, you know, I mean, I don't know how that gets enforced, if it happens or doesn't happen, but...
It seems to me my thought is we all seem to agree that what he did violates the statute. I feel pretty confident that if we went to a hearing, there'd be that finding. So all we're doing, though, is we're punting on what the result is. I mean, we're asking to kind of put this off and go through the process of the administrative hearing to let someone else decide what the punishment is for something that we seem to agree occurred. I'm not sure. I don't like the idea of wasting the time and the resources
right.
to do that. We've dealt with ethical issues before, and we've imposed state suspensions with X, Y, and Z needing to be done, ethics classes, fines, peer reviews, or in this case, maybe, you know, big brothering for X amount of time. In my mind, it comes down to, we know he did this, we think he violated the statute. Does it warrant revocation of his license, whether summary suspension in a hearing or the thought that an administrative judge might revoke it after a hearing? And my personal come down on that is no. I think what he did is egregious, and I do worry about the fact that the only reason you're admitting all this and complaining is because you got caught on video. I do worry about that, but I think we can address that in a state suspension with a consent agreement and have us fill in the blanks on that and put a significant fine, put the big brothering for X amount of time, things like that.
Ethics, yes.
I just, at the end of the day, this is a major ethical violation to me, but we've had those before, and this is, the thought about this happening, we're faced with an isolated incident, and I don't mind facing someone in the future and having them say, hey, you know, five other people came out of the woodwork. We don't have any evidence of that today. We've got an isolated incident. So those are just my thoughts. I can't disagree with how frustrating this is and the lack of trust and some of our lack of faith in even what he's saying today. But in my mind, we've got evidence of an isolated incident. And as bad as it is, I think we address it in ways other than potential revocation.
I am what you're saying, Andy. It's just a question of how high do you rise in terms of infraction. You know, I mean, there are forgivable and unforgivable offenses. My personal opinion. I mean, you have done something which is, in my mind, you know, grossly egregious. But beyond that, you've then, you know, obfuscated. You know, you try to be evasive. You were not telling the truth, you know, trying to hide that. If he didn't do that, if he was, as he says today, forgiving, and I made a mistake, and I'm, and apologetic, or confessed, or however you want to, you know, morally paint it, he didn't. He did not do that. He showed no forgiveness. He became evasive, and unless he was shown the evidence, would not even admit to the infraction. So the combination of the two tends to take this a little higher on my reading.
And if you read the complaint from the real estate broker that filed it, I did take ownership and apologize to him that first day. I said my behavior was unacceptable. I have no excuse. He wrote that in the original complaint, that I stood in front of him and apologized and apologized for putting him in this situation and apologized and said I have no excuse for my behavior and I'm not going to make up some story. And I don't know what possessed me to not do the same thing the first time I talked to Mr. Will. I don't.
That's important. That's important.
I don't.
Well, to go along with it, what Andy said and what you've been saying, you don't take this any further. I kind of like the idea of suspension. But I would think in terms of, you say you have the real estate person, you have a shadow, you have somebody there all the time. I would do it from here on out. I mean, it's as recent as it was, egregious. I wouldn't do it a year. It'd be for the rest of your life. The rest of your professional life as a home inspector, you have to have somebody with you.
Is there something we can put in writing that I'm only allowed to inspect vacant houses? I mean, is that something that I
could... Well, probably a lot of them are vacant, I guess. I don't know.
I don't think vacant.
Vacant, vacant,
I mean,
or
vacant as in no furniture,
not there.
Nobody living there. I know what I did is wrong, and I know that I'm not going to do it again, but you have no idea whether that's true or not, and your design or your board is to protect people, to protect the public, to protect...
Well, that'd be a pretty serious way to go, and it would make sense. One of the questions I would have is, how do we know that that's happening? Can you go to the, is there a homeowner home inspection group that you could say, okay, I had an inspection today and nobody was there, here's the proof, and you just give it to them and they file it? I mean, you don't have that, right?
I don't know what checks and balances should be. I don't know.
Other than you're required to by whatever we come up with.
Right, other than, any day of the week that you want to call me and say, where are you inspecting today? What's the address? And we're going to need pictures and documentation, but then that puts more work on you and more wastes of your time and resources. Yeah.
I have a question for you, Mr. Bartolome.
Yes, sir.
How are you ever going to be able to inspect a house now that has drawers in it that you have to look at? How are you going to face that now?
I'm going to do the right thing, just like I have been doing. When I'm in a walk-in closet and there's plastic closets with drawers, I'm going to open every single drawer just like I have. And on a few of those drawers, I'm going to move the homeowner's stuff over and look at the bottom of the drawer, just like I do now. When I open the bathroom cabinet and there's all sorts of personal items and things under there and I can't see the cabinet, I move them out of the way. I move them out of the way to inspect them. That's all I can say.
Do homeowners go along with you on any of these?
Once in a while.
Once in a while.
Once in a while, homeowners are there.
Do you have any employees? Do you have any employees that could join you?
In the summertime, my son works with me. He's a 20-year-old college student, so he works with me in the summertime as he has for the last couple of years.
It's got to be a third.
Well, and, you know, as to, you know, if we did implement something, you know, that was, you know, cannot perform a home inspection without, you know, someone else present at, you know, throughout the inspection kind of thing, would it be possible, and maybe this is a question for Mr. Donald, would it be possible to, every year he has to, you know, send in a form that attests that he complied with this throughout the year, where it's, a sign, he can even sign a notarized document or something like that, that would go into the file, that if there was a violation, you could say, look, you know, if this ever came forward again, you know, you could, you'd have a document, an affidavit in the file that attested that he signed that he didn't do it.
The issue, legally speaking, the issue that comes up very quickly is whether there's an appropriate discipline to the registrant as opposed to creation of an entirely new class of license just for that registrant. And that's sort of the line that we're dancing on right now. That's why we can't really do a perpetual thing. We can't really do something for the rest of his natural career legally that he would have to do something other registrants wouldn't have to. You could do it for a set period of time. You could have follow-up, you could have monitoring. But in terms of every single year having him supply an affidavit, other registrants don't have to, for a level of oversight beyond that of other registrants, begins to create a new class of home inspector, or if we create a class that can only inspect vacant buildings or something. And plus, from a regulatory standpoint, that becomes an administrative impossibility, practically speaking, because at some point the agency would have to begin creating some kind of master record of registrants with that kind of perpetual individual license requirement. And as you have turnover, it just becomes an impossibility for the agency to actually accomplish.
But what if you did it for a limited time? Like, say, okay, for 5 years,
certainly,
this has to happen, and for 5 years you have to send an affidavit attesting that you did this, but it would only be for a limited amount of time, just so the record, because other than that, the issue I have is, okay, so we say, okay, do this, but what's the, you know, what's the make sure that it actually is happening?
From a legal standpoint, I would encourage considering 5 years as a cap. I think, legally speaking, 5 years would be something that would be appropriate. Again, strictly this is an area that's is a little mushy, legally speaking, because it comes down so much to the circumstances of each case. But I would encourage the board to consider a legal maximum of 5 years for something that kind of oversight, if something were going to happen.
Question. Do you want to table this to deal with everyone else that's patiently waiting while I monopolize all your time and then come back to me?
Nope.
No, I mean like in a half hour come back to me.
No.
Okay. No, we're here. We're doing this now.
Let's finish this. Mr. Bell, would we, if we come to the conclusion that we're going to do some probationary period where he has to do all of his inspections have to be accompanied, could we somehow on the report form require that person accompanying sign something on the report that says I accompanied this inspector on this inspection, and then we could request X number of random copies of reports to be provided to the board as a part of the monitoring, and then go with a 5 year cap. I think I'm comfortable with that.
Like a peer review.
It would be like a peer review, only it would be an accompaniment. It would be an attestation to accompanying him on the actual inspection. Yeah. It's, whether it's a realtor or whomever it is, it says, I was there and watched this individual conduct the entire home inspection.
Sure.
Sign it.
Legally, I think that would absolutely be fine. Yeah.
And I can put a name and a phone number of someone that was there. I don't know how I would get their signature, though, and then have that available.
Well, I mean, they print it out and sign it, I don't care. I want some acknowledgement that they actually want somebody else's ink on the line.
And can't that be part of the report? Like the cover page, whatever you sign?
Yeah.
Wherever you sign this report, just have another line for
accompanied by,
yeah.
Do you want that to be another registrant we have jurisdiction over, or?
No.
I'm thinking it could even be a realtor if that's allowable.
Because
if it's a realtor, they're subject to their own code of ethics and their own ethical standards to their board. And so if we saw that there was collusion or some weird thing going on, we'd turn them into the real estate board.
But it would have to be
somebody. So we still have somebody or a contractor.
I'd like to add, and I don't know if this is possible, but I'd like to add that the person we're protecting here is the homeowner. So let's look at them first, if that's possible. If the homeowner is there to protect Mr. Bartolomei also when he's there against false charges, the homeowner says, yeah, he came through and everything's okay. Maybe that's the way to go.
Well,
everybody's happy.
Well, I think it could be anybody.
I prefer it's either
not related or
right. Either not related or they're... Here's my preference. They have to be not related. It could be the homeowner, I'm okay with that, or it has to be some other person who falls under the jurisdiction of a regulated profession or occupation. So it would be and we can narrow that field because there's a lot of regulated occupations. So it could be a contractor or it could be a realtor.
I think a realtor probably better. If it's a homeowner, isn't it the possibility, if it's a homeowner, that they're not liking the inspection that's going on?
Well, no, there's
report,
always that.
And then I'm not going to sign it.
That's true.
I don't think the homeowner's an option.
Okay.
No, that's a good point.
Outstanding.
The homeowner is an option if they want to go by it, but you might be better off going with the real estate agent.
Well, what we don't want to do is put this gentleman in a position is he does his home inspection, finds a bunch of stuff the homeowner isn't happy about, and now refuses to sign it, and now he's got an unattested... It looks like he's unaccompanied even though it was.
Let's go down this road. We're talking this type of peer attendance, whatever you call it. What about a fine? I mean, I kind of want to, let's get through the elements and see, and then see if we're all ethics class.
So you're not talking about summary suspension, is what I'm
I think we'd be talking about stayed suspension.
Stayed suspension.
Pending. A fine of, what do you think?
$2,000 for...
That's a violation.
There was, two violations? $2,000 each? $2,000 is sort of our limit, isn't it?
Right.
Right.
So let's say penalty of $4,000. When we say an ethics course, I don't know if that gives enough direction.
Yeah, I'm not positive we could do a separate violation for each floor.
No, I think for each for each violation.
For lying to the board?
Okay.
Yeah.
That's it. Certainly.
Yes.
That's, and I thought that I heard was each floor.
Yeah, I think we have violation of 32128C2 as well as R430-10113.
But does the ethics course give enough direction? I don't know how.
I think staff could find a class or help the respondent find a class.
Okay.
And we have to, you know, an 8-hour professional ethics course or something.
I'm sure EAC's got that sort of thing.
Since it is an ethics violation, I mean, or ethics are involved in the violation.
Sure. And then we're talking about cost of investigation and 5 years of
attendance.
Accompanied
inspections.
Unrelated party accompanying.
Attested by the person.
Right, I second that.
Well,
and that person needs to be in a regulated profession of some kind, reasonably related.
Yeah, I'm good with that.
I don't know, we're making this extremely complex. Obviously, we're making it complex in the implementation. It's burdensome on the practitioner. I'm concerned about enforcement. I'm concerned about, you know, infraction, lying, or any other misrepresentation in the future. Honestly, you know, I mean, you can propose that. I mean, that's your prerogative in a consent agreement with all these stipulations. I assume then immediate summary suspension upon violation of any of your stipulations. But still, there is the question of whether or not we're doing the work of the hearing. Maybe the judge at the hearing could provide, you know, in the presence of another building inspector or other individual more knowledgeable in this practice than I am, as to what would be the appropriate level of balances and controls. Again, right now, I hear what we're saying about this going public and about, you know, our reluctance to act on not permitting this practice to go forward. That's my concern. I mean, we live in a very social, active world today, and, you know, people can put things out on a wide variety of platforms. Now, I don't know where the homeowner is going to go with this after she sees what the board has done with this particular issue. She could certainly release it to the public. It's in that kind of a media that could have impact. And I don't want to smirch the home inspection industry because of a single practitioner. I mean, you know, people need to invite them into their home and work under a trust system that would allow them with good character, because we've given them a license to enter in their home and perform that duty. So that's my only concern.
Mr. Hill, did you invite the ledger to be here today?
Yes, sir.
She declined.
She engaged the work schedule.
Sorry?
The work schedule did not permit it.
Well, you could consider a stayed revocation consent agreement with some amount of suspension, some amount of probation, with various terms. And if he violates any terms, then the stay is lifted and the revocation
becomes effective.
Right. So, I mean, you could order some amount of suspension, like, because this was an egregious act.
Yes.
I don't know what that amount would be. It could be a matter of days, it could be a week, it could be months, right, whatever you choose. With the provision that this is a stay of revocation, this is his second chance to demonstrate that he does have good character and can be trusted, not to harm the public.
Okay. Yeah, I'd be willing to accept that, you know, some degree of certainty of outcome on the compromise, that if this infraction, even on our consent agreement, were to appear again, that he would be summarily, you know, revoked.
Yeah,
okay. Mr. Scott, would this, if we come up with this revised consent agreement, does this still go before the ALJ?
No.
This is accepted.
If he's only signed it.
Yeah,
there's
a revised consent agreement that would be, would have to be drafted and then would have to be signed by the registrant, and then the board would have to sign off on it. Now, one thing that I know that the board was talking about, ethics classes and an hour requirement and all that, one thing the board could do, it sounded like the board wasn't really sure what would constitute appropriate ethics classes. The board could also put in a pre-approval requirement for those, meaning that the registrant would find classes that you think satisfy the requirement, and before taking some of the board and present to the board, and then you guys would decide whether or not they actually met what you want in terms of ethics requirements.
Or could I just submit them to your...
Here's another question I have, is could we do a summary suspension until such time that the consent agreement is agreed to and signed? So from today until you guys draft it, till the time he comes in and signs it, summary suspended for that amount of time?
Not as a summary suspension, because if you do a summary suspension, we have to set it here to OLA as quickly as possible. Yes, proceed to OLA. The only way that could happen would be today, were he to enter into a consent agreement for a suspension to terminate upon entry into a subsequent consent agreement. But that would begin to get very...
But they still have to be drafted up and everything else.
Yeah, so there have to be significant modifications to the proposed consent, and then that would have to then be contingent upon acceptance of another consent. So it starts getting very
convoluted.
A lot of moving parts of
that. Yeah.
So,
I'm just thinking protecting the public until such time that all the paperwork gets done. Because obviously it's not going to get done today. You know, whatever we come up with has to be drafted and reviewed. And
as soon as it would be fully executed.
Then it has to be signed, and it has to come back to the board to be approved. So, you know.
If it's on
30 days.
The terms, well, it's got to be signed by the if a consent agreement were drafted on the specific terms explicated by the board, just thinking my way through this, we would have on record the specific terms. The board could authorize, strike that.
It'll go through the process.
Yeah. What we could do to try to expedite matters would be to look at everybody's schedule and possibly set a 10-minute telephonic board meeting specifically to accept the consent agreement. If we have a quorum of the board available telephonically, we could have the consent agreement drafted in the next couple of days and signed by the registrant, and the board could accept it then next week on a 10-minute telephonic. That would certainly be. So if we have a quorum of the board available for 10 minutes, we could do it that way.
If that meeting was set, that would give you guys enough time for public notice.
What's
the benefit of any probation period versus just summary or versus state revocation?
It would offer the respondent the opportunity to demonstrate to the board that he's trustworthy, he's capable and qualified, that he's remediated the actions.
But if we're doing a stayed revocation and he's still doing all the things during that period, how is that any different than a probation for
it isn't really. It's just if we determine based on the probationary terms that he's violated something, then legally we can lift the stay and just impose the revocation.
Oh, so they just kind of run hand in hand. Beyond probation, pending stayed revocation.
Concurrent with it.
Okay.
Probation and state.
Correct.
Okay. So, Andy, can you go through the list?
I can try. So, I propose we offer a consent agreement
that would include probation and a state revocation for 5 years with a $4,000 penalty, costs of investigation, an ethics class to be pre-approved by staff, and during those 5 years, Mr. Bartolome will have a third party, what do we say, participate? Well, I'll get to that in a sec.
Accompany
him on his home, on his complete home inspections, and that third party needs to be regulated by
state agency.
And not family.
Third party.
That would include hairdressers, yoga instructors.
No, I think maybe we need to narrow that to be
yoga instructors
related to the industry.
Accompanied by a third party reasonably related to the industry and governed by a governmental agency or board.
Letter of reprimand.
Filing an order.
Oh, that you need that.
Oh, okay.
No suspension?
No, suspension and...
And probation.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Suspension license. For a period of time, do we suspend his license for 30 days? I mean, it's a way to...
But we can't summarily suspend his license.
No, but we can do it.
He can agree to a
Okay. We can do a 30-day suspension or a 60-day
At which point he can't do any of his work, right?
He can't work. Which is kind of, there's two sides to that coin in my opinion. You can do that, and so it kind of hits another financial thing. It's like another form of penalty, if you will, above and beyond what we're allowed statutorily to do. But at the same time, we're cutting off the source of revenue, and now he can't pay the fines that was imposed. So it's a catch-22.
Ed, we need to acknowledge that if these are the conditions that we see are prerequisite to him practicing home inspection, right, then we can't give him a window to practice it without it. It's paradoxical. In other words, if we don't suspend his license over the period before this becomes effective, then we're basically permitting him to continue practicing.
It wouldn't be suspended until it became effective anyway.
Yeah, we can't summarily suspend it until this.
Right.
Well, this could be next week.
Yeah, but he can continue.
The question is whether
this comes in. And so the question is, do we suspend his license for a given period of time as a further disciplinary action?
Once he signs this.
Once he signs it.
Okay, not before.
Not before. We can't do that.
We can't do that.
Additionally, the board could consider as well that if they're concerned about the week in between, if something were to happen, if a complaint were to come in regarding something, were he actually to do something in the next week going through somebody's house, that would open up another can of worms
we'd have a much shorter discussion.
Right.
The meeting. The tone of the meeting changes.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't know about the probation or suspension for a period of time. I'm not sure.
I'm kind of the opinion we're kind of cutting off our source of getting the rest of the disciplinary action covered.
But it relates to the seriousness of it.
Well, it does.
Of what's happening here. And we're going out of our way to really give this guy a second chance, which I think we all agree to. I think that's probably a good thing to do. Mm-hmm. But we got to say, God dang it, you did this, and it's got to be more painful than just a fine.
You know what, if we do a 30-day suspension as part of this, he's going to be more inclined to get this thing signed and start those 30 days rolling, right?
He could do his ethics in between during that period of time, too, if he wanted to.
And actually, one more question, just from a drafting standpoint. When you say ethics class, how many hours?
I'm required by the state of Minnesota for my license to do 2 hours of ethics. And that's about all. They pretty much cover everything in the 2 hours.
I think New Mexico's 2 as well.
I mean, it's not. to say 8 hours of ethics, I don't know what you would cover in 8 hours, quite
same
frankly.
Thing four times?
Yeah.
Well, we have, I mean, maybe because we need it more. Lawyers have a lot more three-hour options. So, and we could say three hours.
You say minimum 2 hours, sir.
Why don't we say 3 hours?
Yeah, three spots.
3 hours?
Yeah. There are some four-hour courses out there that I've come across trying to find one for architects.
I know we're going to vote on this, but what do you all think about a 30-day suspension as well?
I'm for it. I was thinking even more than that, but
yeah, I'm fine with that too.
I don't care.
Mm-hmm. I mean, 30 days will work.
Okay, then let's make that part of my motion right now, and then.
Voluntary 30 days.
Can we make that the ethics class has to be completed within that 30 days suspension period?
Is it possible?
I don't know how realistic that is.
Okay.
And then they need to be approved.
Right. Okay.
So we ought to put a timeline for the 4,000 payment and the ethics.
Right. Completed so within 90 days.
And that ethics course, because typically they'll be online. We need some verification that you took it. Like the one I take, I have to take a test at the end and pass the test, and then I get a little certificate that says I passed.
Unless someone feels strongly, let's put 90 days in there for the 4,000 in the ethics class.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't care. 60.
I think 30 is good.
For what?
Do this.
Hey, but only the 90 days?
Second.
What else? Is that it?
Could the 90 days be for not just the 4,000 but also the costs and fees?
Yes, I think so.
Investigative fees.
We don't have attorney's fees on this at this point. Yeah.
Holy shit, you were thinking about it.
Should have been right at the top of my head. That should have been what we started with, right? So that's a second.
Second, right?
Okay, yeah. let's read through this. Okay, 30 days suspension, probation and stay notification 5 years, 4,000 penalty to be paid within 90 days, minimum 3 hours of ethics class, pre-approved, investigative cost being paid within 90 days, during 5 year period, registered third party, reasonably related to industry and regulated by state court must be present during inspections.
And do we have to specify that if any of these are violated, that he agrees to immediate revocation?
Well, the stage of revocation will be lifted.
If he falls out of compliance, it comes back to us, and then we can
lift the stay.
We can lift
and
the stay.
We have to send that to Oliver.
That would go to Oliver quickly. Same as the summaries.
Okay.
That would do.
All right.
May I ask a question on the documentation of somebody being with me? If I hired another licensed home inspector to work with me every single day, would that be, and now the report says Stephen Bartlemy, license 39977, and Joe Smith, license blah, 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 inspected this property?
Yeah, just have Joe Smith sign that he was there with you.
You're still capable, as long as they're not working properly.
Oh, so it couldn't, okay, that's what I was asking.
Yeah. Not an employee.
Okay, so that's what I was asking.
Clarify that.
Another home inspector to be with me every day.
You couldn't afford another home inspector to do it.
Yeah.
It wouldn't work either, that'd be worse. I mean, I'm thinking more in terms of somebody that's already there. Some responsible party that's already there at the house with you.
Yeah. I think that's where a realtor comes in.
Right.
Yeah. Something like that. Yeah. It just makes sense.
Did you say this how I do it?
Okay.
It's on you, sir. Proposed and seconded.
So, Mr. Everode, would you like to read your motion out loud?
Everode moved and Gilmore seconded to a consent agreement encompassing a 30-day suspension, probation, and stayed revocation for 5 years, $4,000 penalty fee to be paid within 90 days, a minimum of 3 hours of ethics class to be pre-approved by staff and to be completed within 90 days, investigative costs to be paid within 90 days. During the five-year period, a registered third party reasonably related to the industry and regulated by a state board must be present during inspections.
Do we have investigative costs?
Should we say a state agency? I'm thinking, I just don't.
Yeah, a state agency.
State agency. Because it could be a contractor, and they're not a board.
So I think we can actually take the word registered out from before third party, because it's defined afterward.
And not employed or related to responding.
Do we have
And should home inspection, should it say home inspections? I mean, if third...
Yeah, third party.
I guess.
It usually means unrelated, but...
So a homeowner would not be acceptable?
I think a homeowner would be acceptable, but there's a risk that you run. I don't know if you heard the discussion.
Yeah, I did. Yes. I'm just...
Oh. Okay. Well, but they're not regulated by a state
agency. They're not regulated by a state agency. Right.
That's why I said a homeowner wouldn't be acceptable then, because it says regulated by a state agency.
But they would be acceptable, though, really, when you get down to it.
Well, except for the concerns we have.
Not under the terms of the consent.
Not terms of the consent.
So no?
No.
Yeah, I would
no on homeowner.
Yeah, I would say that's too much of a risk, because if they refuse to sign it, now he's done a home inspection where no one attests to it, and his license gets revocated right away.
It's not fair to him.
Yeah, I don't think that's probably fair to you, and it's probably wise to protect yourself by not having that.
Yeah. So I'll just, to end, during the five-year period, a third party reasonably related to the industry and regulated by a state agency and unrelated to or employed by a respondent must be present during inspections.
Are you comfortable with that, Mr. Everode?
Ish. Yes, I am.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Just as a quality control measure, because we have a second here for Mr. Gilmore. Mr. Gilmore, read through it and give us another second. Reaffirm your second.
Do we read the motion?
Please.
Just yourself.
Everode moved and Gilmore seconded the offer of a consent agreement encompassing 30-day suspension, probation, and state revocation for 5 years. $4,000 penalty to be paid within 90 days, minimum 3 hours of ethics class to be pre-approved by staff, and to be completed within 90 days. Investigative costs, we need to have an amount there?
Don't fill that in.
To be paid within 90 days during a five-year period, a third party reasonably related to the industry and regulated by a state agency and unrelated to or employed by a respondent. Must be present during inspections.
Are you comfortable with that in a second?
Yes, I am.
And Mr. Chairman, if I may just very quickly summarize my understanding as board counsel for uniquely crafted language in this is due to consideration by the board in full of both the egregious nature of the allegations balanced against, additionally, the consideration of the public safety. Would that be an accurate summary?
Yeah. You'll have to say that again. That was pretty lofty for me.
I'm with you. That's a good point. That's a good point.
The extraordinary attention to detail in the remedy in this case is the direct result of the board's consideration of the egregious nature of the allegations balanced against the protection of the public, the board's need to protect the public. Is that an accurate summary of why the board is handling this case in this manner?
I think I'll defer to the board on that.
That's what probably would
folks.
Yeah.
I would say yes.
Yes. So we have a motion and a second.
Can we put that those words?
Yes.
In the beginning of this paragraph.
So
based on that,
that'll go into the consent agreement.
Okay. My mouth.
Thank you, Mr. Donald. By the way.
You're welcome. If you ever have trouble sleeping, just give me a call.
Okay, so we have a motion and we have a second. Is there any further discussion? With that, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Aye.
You say nay.
That'd be a nay.
Nay. The letter I.
Okay.
That completes the case, correct?
Break.
Okay, to make sure I understand this, a new consent agreement's going to come to me. I'm going to have to sign it. I'm going to have to pay this within 90 days.
You can discuss all that with Mr. Will.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, gentlemen and ladies.
And let's go ahead and take a break here. I'll give you 15 minutes here. I got 11:35, so 11:50. I'm going to call us back into session here at 11:50. And we have three more enforcement matters. We can start with, we'll work up the list. We'll start with 6C1, which is Home Inspector Case H118021, and it is proposed consent agreement.
6A1?
C1.
C1, Charlie.
And we don't have the respondent here. We do have Mr. Thacker at the table. The synopsis of the complaint is on January 16th, the board received a complaint that contained a home inspection report dated January 3rd, 2017, alleging the respondent provided professional services as home inspector at 4401 Meadowview without benefit of board certification. And the investigative conclusions ended up at violation of ARS 32145. Respondent conducted a home inspection at 4401 East Meadowview Lane in Flagstaff while the certification was expired. A violation of ARS 32145-2. The respondent advertised the practice of home inspection on respondent's firm website without certification with the board and ARS 32141, and that the respondent firm advertised and practiced home inspection without firm registration with the board. Recommendation is assurance of discontinuance, civil penalty in the amount of $1,000, and cost of investigation of $301. If not signed within 30 days, proceed to formal hearing. I'll open it up for the board for discussion.
Has the respondent since renewed their registration? And
they have not.
Registration? They have not.
Well,
they would have to go through the whole training process again.
Oh, they would.
Been expired.
Oh.
Canceled, sorry.
Canceled. Oh.
Expired and canceled.
Are they canceled, Sean? I'm sorry, I didn't.
Yes, they are. They are canceled.
I was thinking the penalty was too high, but not anymore.
Even though it's expired and we're not going to renew.
They're canceled.
What can they still have to? We still enforce the fine and the penalties? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, sure. It would just be like an unregistered person.
It's a civil penalty instead of an administrative penalty at that point.
Okay, I'll make a motion to offer consent agreement, insurance discontinuance, civil penalty $1,000, cost investigation $301.
I'll second.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion?
Yeah.
No. Hearing none. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes. Let's go on to 6B, Bravo 2, H118009.
People here waiting for something.
Before we go to that 6B2 item, is there anybody in the audience that's here to speak or here for an item, rather? No? Okay, thank you.
Just enjoy our company.
So 6B2 is a resolution by letter of concern and the complaint. The board received a complaint alleging that the respondent failed to accurately report on the condition of a roof, failed to report the plumbing was backed up, and failed to report on the condition of the septic system during a May 12, 2017 inspection. And the investigative conclusions are the investigation found that there was no evidence to support the allegations presented in the complaint. However, respondent report failed to meet the standards of professional practice for Arizona home inspectors by failing to include his name on the home inspection agreement. Staff recommendation, issue respondent a letter of concern for failing to include his name on the home inspection agreement as required in SOP number, looks like 2.2.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I'll open it up to the board.
I'll make a motion to issue a letter of concern.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
Hearing agreement without a signature.
Hearing none, the motion passes.
No, it's just his name. It was signed.
It is the reason.
The next item is 6A1, and I have to recuse myself on this item. So, Mr. Gilmore, if you'd do the honor of grabbing the reins here.
Yeah. Which one is it again?
6A1.
just moved up.
Mr. Gilmore.
Yeah.
Moved to dismiss.
Right here.
I'm under some pressure here, guys. Work with me.
He's a new guy. Mr. Secretary.
Item 6A1, case number P18062, involving respondent Mr. Glenn Ludwig. Synopsis of complaint on March 16th, the board received a complaint alleging the respondent prepared and submitted revised footing plans to Mojave County Development Service Department that failed to include required calculations in the current soils report for a footing project at 10729 Shimmering Way in Mojave County, Arizona. We have a staff recommendation for dismissal. Any discussion?
I'll make a motion to dismiss the complaint.
Second. We have motioned to dismiss. Can we have a vote, please?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Motion carries. Thank you.
Oh, come on. Jack.
Oh, 30 seconds in the spotlight.
He wants you to keep going.
Jason.
Let's get through it.
That could be a real record.
Okay, so that concludes enforcement matters. We will move on to no licensing matters. Is that still correct? Am I looking at the right agenda?
We have 8A.
We have a 7A that was added, and that's what
we
I
did.
Thought.
We did.
We did. Okay, we did. Yeah, that's that. Correct. Okay, I'm sorry. That was there. I remember now. So, 8A1.
Mr. Chair, I move that we cancel the listed registrations or certifications that have failed to renew for one full renewal period.
And second?
I slipped by again.
We have a motion and a second.
Can you give us a few minutes to see if our name's on it?
Yes.
I'll check for you.
Actually, I told him to put your name on this one.
Just screw with you. Just move on.
Undrained.
He has a name on that list. That
catches me.
I vote against it.
Have we voted on this yet? Or?
No, we haven't.
Is everybody prepared? Or?
Yeah.
Looking. Not a Jones. Holy crap.
A lot of engineers.
I'm good.
Neil, you're not on there. I checked.
My cousin Mark is.
Is he?
Yeah, just made that up.
He's not your cousin?
No.
He's not your Mark.
Woodrow Jones.
Are we waiting on something in particular here?
I'm waiting on Mr. Jones.
To do what?
To vote. Really? You were looking at the list.
Aye.
It's like looking at a menu in the restaurant.
Just seeing if they put my name on here.
Call the question.
Okay, we're ready to vote.
Don't wait for Jones.
All in favor?
You're all voting. Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries.
I'm in your camp.
We have the review list, 8-2, and I don't believe we vote on that. That's correct. Okay, we can go to policy matters, number 9. And what do we have here?
Endorsement. License endorsement.
Looks good, Melissa.
Gentlemen, by way of explanation, this statute is before you based on your discussion last month about the statute we'd like to propose this session for licensure by endorsement, and after last month's discussion where we talked about exemptions from the exam requirement statute, we had hoped that making similar changes to that statute was in order at this time as well. So the language that is in your packet basically takes out the exemption for those from foreign countries with the intent that they would not qualify for an exemption and would have to take the national exams to demonstrate ability to practice safely. And we took out the 4 years of experience acceptable to the board to obtain a second engineering license because of the concerns that were expressed last month regarding how easy it would be to qualify for a second license without taking the national exam to demonstrate proficiency. So this language is here for you to review and discuss. Obviously, it's simply a draft. If you like it, you can vote to include it with the licensure by endorsement statute for us to go and talk to the legislature and the governor's office about in our attempt to facilitate getting people licensed more quickly.
Let's see. Example of the getting an engineer a 4 year.
Well,
structural
want to
be a civil.
No, it's the civils that
become that want to
be structural. Yeah. Get a structural license without ever taking a structural
exam.
Yeah,
that's not gonna.
Right, and having heard from the Structural Engineering Association, they were very concerned about this statute because their exam and their course of study, and obviously Jason can speak to it, is beefier.
Oh, yeah.
With regard to structures and the necessity to understand all that is required to practice safely. So, basically, that section of the statute really only applies to the engineering profession because all the others, all of the other professions, you get a license to practice landscape architecture and you show us 4 years of engineering, it's not going to qualify you to become an engineer in Arizona or architecture. But with engineering, obviously, we have seen a fair amount of people applying to obtain a second designation without testing and demonstrating their competence. So, you know, it was my understanding from our discussion last month that the board members were concerned about it. And again, we've heard concern from Structural Engineering Association on this issue. So,
I agree.
The question regarding the geology on D.
Yes.
We require successfully passing the national examination required for professional practice with respect to geology.
Yes.
Do we need to say ASBOG because that is the group? I don't know if there's other groups that might say they're national and you could take that exam if there was one. I'm not aware of any, but
I stayed generic because ASBOG may decide to change their name at some point, or there may become a second association that offers exams that the board in the future might think are equivalent and okay. But we could try to be more specific if you feel...
So what would happen then if, they say, there was another exam that just started? They would put that on their application saying, I passed this.
Right.
And then whoever reviewing it would say, well, that's nice, but that's this not doesn't do it.
Exam we'd okay. like you to pass. And we can make it more specific. Again, these are statutes, so if you feel the rule needs to provide more guidance, we can include ASBOG and NCARB and all of those in the rule, which I think we already do. But, you know, the statutes are in practice more general, and then the rules are more specific.
It gives us more long-term flexibility that way. We can keep the rules to a minimum and put more in, I mean, the statute to a minimum, put more in rules, then we have more flexibility.
Right. I mean, and the whole idea, you know, is the legislature or the generalists, they recognize in theory that they don't know very much about the practices that we regulate here. They, and the governor, impanel board members with the expertise to more and better define what's required to practice safely. So that's why rules are generally more specific.
As you spoke in theory.
In theory.
That's good, okay.
Okay, any more discussion, questions? Do we need to take an action on this?
I would like it, so we can say on the record that the board reviewed this. It reflects the intent to protect the public, and we'd like it to join with the endorsement statute we considered last month as a package deal for me to go forth and ask for support.
Board, I'll make a recommendation that we accept staff's licensure by endorsement language in this current draft.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries. Passes.
Where's it talk about the license, what you just said?
Licensure by endorsement. That's on the top of the
next,
second page.
Next page. That's...
West PG.
Yeah.
Oh, this one. All right. I didn't read that. What about the one before that we were looking at?
Well, there are different sections of the statute.
Are you done with this? Because we are.
He had to get a fire at the body to hear it.
You got so fast.
Okay, moving on to the director's report. Melissa.
Yeah. I apologize for not making this available to you earlier, largely because we were waiting on the budget update from Central Services Bureau, which I got, but didn't include what we call the 13th month, which is generally in July. The checks we write in June to beat the end of fiscal year usually cash, and they give us July numbers. I still haven't received those because I'm sure they're backed up. But I can tell you that our appropriation for last year was $2,233,700. We spent, as of June 30th, $1,924,952 for an excess that will roll over into essentially our savings account of about $300,000, $308,748. So that extra $300,000 rolls into our savings account, which basically brings the savings to about $3 million in our fund, which is good, and that's where I think industry would like us to fall in case the governor or the legislature were ever to decide to sunset us. We would have enough money in our reserve fund to operate until the sunset date. So considering that our budget is in the next year about $2,300,000, just slightly more than this, we have enough to operate if we had no revenue come into the board next year. And that will, of course, not happen. There's also $34,000 in the enforcement fund, which is where those civil penalties and administrative penalties go that you levy against the respondents. And obviously, we use that money to fund education for the investigators. The car that the investigators used to drive to various locations, picking up evidence, that sort of thing. We also use it to buy certain supplies that investigations unit needs. So, again, I don't have the numbers for the 13th month yet, and I'm hoping the July numbers for the first month of the new fiscal year will be coming with those 13th month figures, and I'll report on that next month. So, we are currently working with IT Partners, which is a Microsoft vendor, to clean up the data. We have had a delay, thanks to Asset, in obtaining the required sandbox in which to house the cleaned up data, but I'm hoping that that will appear before the end of the month, because I'm not allowed to spend any of the money, any of that $300,000 holdover, after July 30th. So if, and our vendor is cleaning up the data and storing it currently in a temporary site, so hopefully it'll just be an easy thing for him to move the cleaned up data into this new sandbox environment when we finally get it, which I am promised will occur before the end of July. Any other updates, amendments, enhancements or whatever will have to come out of our budget in this new fiscal year, so I can update you if and when that becomes necessary. And I'm happy to report that Kurt and Michelle have been upgraded to supervisory positions within the board. This has been announced to staff. They understand that operations and licensing, which are now basically one unit, will have three separate teams in them. Rob is currently the virtual manager, or the, what do you call it, ultimate manager, I guess.
Three teams.
For the three teams. Kurt heads up the communications team, which he is staffing with Dolly, and then the operations team, Michelle heads up, and Kayla and Jean are working with her in that unit. We also have a temp that is working at the front desk to give us some flexibility, because we expect an employee to go out on medical leave, so we're cross-training one of the front desk employees to assist in that unit during an unknown period of time. So, do you guys want to say anything about enforcement or licensing and operations? We're good? Rob?
Who's in charge of the sandbox?
Who's in charge of the sandbox?
Yeah, is that a server?
Assets.
Is that a server? Is that what that means?
It's basically a server, yeah. And Asset is the reason for the delay, to be perfectly direct. They have big issues, and we are not one of them. So I have been emailing, and yeah. So I'm hoping we will get our sandbox before the end of fiscal year. And then as you know, the governor's office has started to reach out to currently sitting board members who are up for reappointment, and to new members, potential members, to interview to replace some of our soon-to-be departing members. I don't know about any engineers being interviewed. There were several on the list, but I do want to point out Mr. Rick Bright, who's in back sitting near Tina. He's an architect from Tucson who just came over from the governor's office after an interview to fill the position Ed vacates. So, it's my understanding.
He gets the lead, but I don't.
You bought a shirt.
I'm not quite seeing the fairness of all this.
Architecture, buddy. Just to be.
Rule. Neil has an interview tomorrow?
Next week.
Oh, next week. Okay. And then I also heard that they did contact Steve as well. So,
Need to talk.
Yeah. Yeah. What you should know, which is agendized, is what's been happening in the regulatory arena recently. First of all, the governor's office contacted me right after last month's board meeting to ask what our plan was to issue fee waivers and grant people licensure without paying the fee. You remember that bill that went through the legislature? And I said, well, no one's applied for a fee waiver, which is true. And they wanted a more formal answer, so I worked with Alejandro and we drafted a letter that basically said no one's applied, but if they do apply, we direct them, and this is on our website, to contact the Department of Revenue and obtain a fee waiver, because nobody here on staff is qualified to determine that, and we don't have a statutory authority to accept tax documents. So if they are able to obtain a waiver, then they can present it to us as part of the application process, and we will speedily and with all due diligence grant their registration. And if they cannot, then we will require the fee as pursuant to our statute. So I got a letter back saying thank you for your quick response. And apparently approximately 600 people statewide have gotten fee waivers from other agencies. So the governor's office did offer to provide me with some best tips to make that happen, fee waiver wise. So great. Any communication we have with the governor's office and any interest, I am considering a positive thing. The second interesting development, which...
Before you move on, I liked your answer. I think that's a fair answer to the people applying. They need to go through some process to demonstrate their need.
I left out my legal concerns about the statute that, first of all, it doesn't say notwithstanding any other law. It's a general statute, and we have a specific statute which requires payment. You guys know all my arguments about that. But anyway, I left all of that out and just said, we will happily accept a waiver if someone presents it to us. The second interesting development some of you may have seen on the news, and it involves the dental board. Mm-hmm. The dental board apparently...
Our dental board here?
Yes. Yeah. This is as it relates to the fact that I did not receive my raise. The governor's office, Alejandro wrote a very nice letter after you all voted last month to give me a 5% raise, explaining my measurable successes.
I said 10%.
Thank you.
The person that wasn't here.
And received a response from Department of Administration that they were declining to take action on my raise because of what's going on in the regulatory environment. And that is what's happened recently with the dental board. So thank you for making me backtrack. The dental board issues licenses to practice as a dentist, but then they issue separate certificates to administer anesthesia because obviously people don't want to be in pain when they're getting various dental procedures. So to qualify for that separate certification, there are requirements not unlike your own where you have to have schooling and you have to provide documentation from people who have seen you do administration of anesthesia, that sort of thing. So they had issued a certificate some years back to an individual based on the documents that he provided that were alleged to have been falsified. And they got several complaints about this man having presented falsified documents. And you can see the interviews on Channel 15. The dental board briefly looked into the complaints and closed them without looking into them further. And I don't know why that is, whether they felt that they didn't have jurisdiction or they couldn't determine if the documents were false. I don't know. But those complainants went to Channel 15, and Channel 15 looked into it and determined the documents were fake. And the governor was very upset that the public could be harmed and wrote a letter to the board members that basically said either you look into disciplining this individual or I'm going to remove you for cause because you're not protecting the public. And the executive director was blamed for not opening the investigation or closing the investigation or whatever. And I don't know if any of that is right or wrong. It doesn't matter. But what happened was their longtime executive director resigned and retired, and the dentist at issue was arrested and is facing criminal charges. So the status of that case is pending. But that was the reason that Alejandro got for the fact that my raise was not approved.
What's the time? What's the
issue? Because they're concerned that the executive directors are out of control and the regulatory boards are not protecting the public.
It's an overarching hearsay.
Yeah.
Go talk.
Yeah.
You're going to see Dougie next week.
No, he works for a different elected official. So
this seemed to be, I think this was on the media.
Right.
Where actually the reporter attended an open meeting like this and challenged the executive director at the open session with the evidence, which she summarily dismissed and refused to answer any questions or invite the board to participate in sharing and responding to any of these allegations. So, I mean, it was rather bizarre, but it was all on the news. So
right.
it was a situation just like this where the individual from the news media was sitting in that chair and speaking with the executive director, but it was non-participatory. And
it may have been in their call to the public.
But
you
can't do
understand
anything.
When people come to call to the public,
right.
The board can't dialogue, but they can direct staff to accept the documents or whatever.
And put it on the agenda
for
a future meeting.
Right. I'm not privy to all the facts, but that was the rationale that was given. And Alejandro was told that we can resubmit the request maybe in 6 months, so sometime after the election.
Oh, after his re-election.
Correct.
Or not.
So, it's still the issue of, are we protecting the public, which is definitely our primary mission. I believe we are, and I know my staff makes every effort to investigate cases thoroughly, to present information you guys need, to make the right decisions, not just about investigations, but about applications for registration. So, obviously, if we could do better, I want to hear it, and we have been doing better. You guys know all the statistics. So I'm not afraid of scrutiny of our board because I think we do a really good job. And if somebody has some ideas for improvement, great, let's talk about them. Let's see if we can do it. You know, I think going to the legislature with the idea of an endorsement statute is a good one, whether it goes anywhere or not. At least it shows that the board is interested in making it easier for people to obtain registration to practice here. But not at the expense of public safety, you know. So, FYI, guys.
Wow. So I might not get my raise?
No, you're
$30
stuck with
$30 a month. And dropping down $29 a month.
Yeah.
That's crazy thinking. I don't know.
And the statistics in the report are obviously based off of what is currently in the CRM. I think it's pretty accurate, right?
Yeah, it's still just the numbers of firms can be still kind of weird just because of how NGL, there's a tier system that we had, so it had multiple disciplines under one firm. Engineers, if an engineer aspect to it, it was just counted as an engineer firm regardless of what other disciplines might be underneath it. In our new system, it doesn't count it that way, so the count's a bit off because I actually have to do it myself how I do. I want to count this firm towards this discipline or not that. And it's easy if I see engineer, I do that, but beyond that, I have to kind of determine my own way to count them when they have multiple disciplines.
Can a firm be more than one, though, right?
Yes, they can. Yeah, as long as there's a principal who has to stand for that discipline.
So, I guess I didn't quite follow that. So, if you saw an engineer, you can call it an engineering firm, but if they have geology and a geologist,
they're not mechanical, electrical, plumbing.
They're not added to the geological column,
or
they are?
It could be counted twice.
It's basically GL just prevented a firm from being counted twice or three times or four times by doing the hierarchy system where engineers were first, maybe then like architects. I'm not really sure exactly what the hierarchy was.
That's the way it should be.
We just learned a few minutes ago that it's not that
The numbers in the report are pretty similar to what we've seen throughout the past couple of years. We're hovering right around 30,000 active licensees and about 5,000 active firms. Sometimes that number goes up a little. It's a little over 30,000. Sometimes firms are up higher than that, but that's the general consensus with, you know, approximately 6,000 architects, approximately 8,000 or 18,000 engineers.
So those 18,000 engineering firms, they practice geology, the geologist representative. Are they counted under the geology total?
Yes, they're counted as a geology firm. Yours is a geology firm.
Well, in the instance that it was that engineering and geology, when GL did the count, it would only be an engineering firm.
Oh.
It would not count as a geology firm.
But if they only had one principal that was a geologist, it was a geology firm.
We can't do that yet.
It couldn't be engineering as well without a principal.
No, but if they were just practicing geology.
We have engineers. We have geology, engineering, geotech.
Doug, can you open an investigation on this guy?
My only question is, are you undervaluing geology or who else? Landscape architects, or I don't know, whoever.
Yeah.
Trained geologists.
Yes,
we're used to
how the system is set up, how it was set up, the hierarchy, it most certainly probably was.
And hopefully with the data cleanup.
But see, that would be important. So instead of saying there's only 100 geology firms, maybe there's 500. Make the group bigger.
Right.
Make the governor respect us more.
I could try to go through and count them all, but that would take me a great deal of time, how we have it set up right now, where I can, because some of these firms will have 7 disciplines. And it's how it's set up right now. It's not going to separate each one of those out. It's going to be a big block of this.
But most of those are just engineering disciplines, aren't they? But if you engineer, engineering architect, geology, I mean, they kind of...
There's architectural engineering firms, and there's engineering architect firms, like HDR, that have a Phoenix present. They're an engineering architecture firm. So they have all level disciplines of engineering and architecture.
Yeah.
And landscape architecture.
But... architecture and landscape works that are not counted in...
Well, that's what just...
It makes the grand total accurate as opposed to the totals for each discipline. So I guess where's the accuracy you want from
the grand total. You're just showing firms that are registered.
Correct.
But it doesn't show you all the geology firms that are registered.
So hopefully with the cleanup, we'll be better able to demonstrate all of this. Accurately record all the numbers of all the firms and all the registrants we have. And, you know, I think if you feel we're not doing a good job explaining the importance of the professions, we need to have a bigger discussion about that on another agenda. Hopefully in the lectures and the interviews and all of that you give, definitely I recommend that you talk about how you protect the public, why your profession is important. There are professions, obviously, that require education and experience, and the public doesn't really understand what you guys do. I mean, they think generally architects just draw pretty pictures, and landscape architects just plant flowers, and engineers drive trains. And who knows what surveyors do other than, you know, stand on the street wearing bright colored vests.
That's what surveyors do, block traffic.
You know, so
call you on the phone at dinner time.
Yeah.
Right. So, you know, And we can help you do that. So, you know, if you think we need to be doing this better,
so like this, this one chart here would be total number of registered firms.
Yeah, there's 53 geology firms.
This should be total number of registered geology firms, registered engineering firms.
Right, and that's the intent of the statistics capture.
You hungry?
No.
We think it's good accurate, work. But it's hard to know.
Right. Well, there's only 50-year firm. Why do we even register you guys? You don't do anything.
Is that
any
it,
other
Melissa?
Questions? Yeah, I'm done, guys. Sorry.
Okay. No questions for Melissa?
Yeah, well,
okay.
Enforcement, why do we still have a 2016 case? Is that a difficult one? Or?
I went storming down the hallway to find that out myself, and that's an old one that's still on the books. It's an investigation case.
It's PE. It's an engineering case from 2016, enforcement case.
Yeah.
I just wonder why we have that one hanging out there that's 2 years old.
Isn't that structural engineer guy coming about?
Probably. It's probably just me waiting for me to get off the board so they drop a hammer on me.
Yeah.
Daniel B. Stevens, an alarm person, assigned to Doug Kramer.
It doesn't show alarm. It shows it under the PE list.
Oh.
There's some 2017 ones hanging out there, but that one 2016 one, I don't know. Look into it, see if we can figure out which one it is and get it resolved so they don't drag on.
Dean Ashworth? Oh. Yeah, it's Jeff's case, and the licensee was really impossible to contact, something.
Has it been on the board?
Yes.
You see all the troubled fields, but not landscape architecture geologists.
So, it came to us December.
You guys are
losers.
Yeah.
It should be stars instead of stars.
I know, gold stars.
My halos. Can you see it?
Oh, halos.
I mean, if you can't get a hold of a guy or do anything, I guess we can just move it forward.
And Jeff and I talked about it, but right now I'm not remembering the specifics of whether there's an outstanding concerns or what. So we'll follow up.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
11, Board Chair's Report. I just have a few quick comments. Back in May, one of our valued EAC members...
I'm sorry, but on the agenda, it's nothing to consider on the Board Chair Report.
Then I have nothing. Thank you, Mr. Bellum.
Yes, news.
Excellent observation.
Sorry, Jason, I didn't even think to ask you. I apologize.
Oh, that's okay. That's all right. Standing committee reports. Legislation and rules?
Nothing here.
Nothing.
Home inspector rules. Nothing. board member reports on outside activities. ASBOG?
Can I give my time to Jason?
There's a meeting in Monterey in October.
Thank you. We're looking into it.
Are we done?
Yeah.
Okay. Clarb?
Meeting in September in Toronto. Jack and Patty are attending.
Wow.
And Clarb?
Detroit. Back from the annual meeting in Detroit. Neil is there. Patty, Melissa, and myself.
Rob.
Ed
has been elected. He's going to be president of the region.
Chair of the region now.
Yep.
Actually, I am the chair.
You are the chair.
As of July 1.
What region?
Congratulations. Western Region.
Is the guy from San Diego, the former chair?
He's now the director, regional director. So John Baker's the regional director.
Took
Oshwald's place, yeah. So, not a lot of earth-shattering things to report. A lot of it was just housekeeping stuff for NCARB, a lot of resolutions.
to vote Oregon off the island because they just drug it out. They can't, boy, they just, it was crazy with their minutia of what is means or something, I don't know. But I think actually it's helped, a lot of what NCARB has done has helped streamline the ability for folks to get certificates. I think it would actually look good for our state in being able to alternative paths to certification. Being regional chair now means I get to serve on three different NCARB committees. And I'll be headed to Nashville for the pre-meeting for the regional summit. It'll be in Nashville in March of next year. So some of you will still get to see me if Mr. Bright is lucky enough to sit in this chair in the next month. But I'll still be around.
He's still going to be on the LNR if we can ever get a quorum. Which we are grateful for, by the way.
Thanks. I'm glad to do it.
Okay, thank you, Ed. NCEES, anybody?
Any goodies yet for goodies?
We are working on finding things for free. The Phoenix Convention Bureau is giving us brochures that include things like the 10 coolest things to do in Phoenix.
In August.
Right.
Stay inside, number 1 through 10.
Right. We have from state tourism, we have, you know, like other brochures and things, but the state comptroller said we can't use state funds to buy items for, as gifts, and we knew that, so we just had that confirmed, so.
Melissa, I got a listing of the registered attendees from Arizona, and you and I are not on it. I just wanted to inquire as to how we address that when we get there, because I do want to attend some of the breakout
sessions.
You
should be on this?
I'm not. And neither are you.
Okay. Neither am I. Great. Okay. Thank you. I'll look into
my
it.
My name isn't on there. Is
yes, it is. Jason Mounts.
Scratch it off.
Okay, and I'm pretty sure we paid for you anyway, Gene. So.
Okay. All right. Yeah, just so we can participate with the members. I know that Jason and Alejandro will be the voting members from Arizona. You guys control the buttons, I guess.
You can too.
So it could have to do with who's funded and who's being paid, but Scott is going, Orlean is going, Patty and Kurt, and they are sponsoring Rob, Alejandro, and Jason. So we'll make sure we're on.
Yeah, so by the time it's August 15th, okay. Thank you.
Okay.
Tell them I'm security.
anything else on NCEES?
Nope.
Nothing? Okay. Future board meetings, August 28th, 2018. And we should have an NCEES report after that, I think.
Yeah, you should.
You should.
Suggested topics for future meeting agendas. I have one. I'd like to talk about how we all signed this card for one of our deceased EAC members. James Muth passed away in May, and he was a longtime EAC member and just a mentor to the community and a wonderful surveyor, and his son continues to survey. And I'd just like to send our sympathies to the family. So I'll pass this around, and we can talk about that on our future meeting agenda.
Nice.
So there's a pen. With that, does anybody have anything else? I don't have anything on the agenda, so if anybody wants to move,
we're moving.
Adjourn.
Hopefully moved.
Second.
Got a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye, aye. Aye, aye.
Any opposed, Madison?
Yeah.
Meeting adjourned.
Thank you.